There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man. We're all gonna die.
That's losing. He's losing his cool.
Yours, mine, there.
Hey everybody, this is Roy from Yours, Mine, and Theirs, and I can't find my awards notes anywhere. Game over, man! Game over!
Wow, what do you know? Okay, hey, I'm John, and I don't want to rain on your parade, but this podcast is going to last 17 hours. Game just starting, man. Game just starting.
Okay, hey guys, this is Tony, and I am officially the biggest sexual tyrannosaur here.
Hey guys, this is Sean Cortesi, and I just wanted to say that Gotham's got a new Santa.
Perfect. So anyway, hey, this is the Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast, and we're joined today. This is a first. We're joined by brothers. So Sean and Tony Cortesi, and we've got a seriously testosterone-loaded podcast for you today.
My blood is boiling. I don't even have to pump my muscles today.
So if somehow you've stumbled onto this podcast, we let you guys on Facebook pick our category, and then you guys pick a movie, and one of us picks a movie, and another one of us picks a movie. But this time, we brought the Cortesi brothers on, who've listened to the podcast before and have helped us make some decisions for movies and categories in the past, and I like their taste, I like their style, so they're on, and they brought their movies, and their movies today include Aliens, Predator, and Batman Returns. So it's going to be a good time. The way I know these brothers is through my brother Josh, and I guess I don't really know how you guys know Josh, but there seems to be a link between Josh and you guys and Dream a Little Dream, so I don't know if this, it's kind of traumatic then for me.
And me.
Well, to be completely honest, we've known Josh. We're Josh's neighbors, and so we've known Josh for almost 20 years now, feels like. And the Dream a Little Dream was actually Josh roped us into forcing you guys to watch that. That's the honest truth. I don't know how honest we wanted to get, but Josh was absolutely adamant that the Coreys get one more shot, especially with Dream a Little Dream 2. He was adamant, and I was inspired by his passion and could not let the Coreys not have one final say.
And did you guys watch Dream a Little Dream 2?
Yeah, did you watch it?
Say, I have only seen Dream a Little Dream 1. Josh's description alone was enough to make me think that I needed to keep and preserve the hours of my life and not go with
Well, I don't think Josh saw Dream a Little Dream 2, but so you guys joined our little group because Josh needed ringers to vote for Dream a Little Dream 2.
Like, yeah. he just, like, hauled you in, is, like, he just rounded you up in a van to go to the voting booth. Like, you're the voting booth van people that I've heard so much about.
Oh, he was campaigning. I mean, it wasn't just us. There were numerous people he was going to. I mean, I saw that he roped Roberta in and was saying that she had some sort of emotional tie to it. He was just Adam, and I think deep down Josh truly loves the Coreys more than he lets on. He tries to say that it's a joke, but I think deep down Josh truly does love the Coreys and probably wishes he was the third Corey.
Yeah. Well, he can be the second Corey now because Corey Haim's dead. So.
But he lives on in our hearts. Okay. So as long as we continue to talk about him, I believe he's still alive.
Okay. So every time Roberta votes, I know Josh is just logging onto her computer. That's how that. I'm pretty sure that's going down. So, but whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, John, quick hot take. Which was worse, Dream a Little Dream or Dream a Little Dream 2?
I think Dream a Little Dream was worse just because it just. I think I had. it made me talk like this, Dream a Little Dream 1 did. It just made me... Like, Dream a Little Dream 2, I kind of hated. I'm like, this kind of sucks. But Dream a Little Dream 1 was a traumatic event of my life.
Yeah, I
like,
think...
It was trauma.
We were angrier, right? So, Dream a Little Dream 2 involves Corey singing a couple songs, which almost makes it as bad as Dream a Little Dream 1.
Yeah.
Anyway, Perfect Woman.
Honestly, too many dreams for me. So.
And there was no Robards in the second one, so the little bit of the Robard charm was left off. But anyway, well...
No Robards in the second one, even though he was mentioned 3,000 times.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Sean and Tony, I'm glad you're part of our community, regardless of the you guys coming on just to make it so we had to watch the second worst movie I've seen on this podcast. So.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Then that is the honest truth.
Okay, so Josh tells me that there's a little bit of a Hollywood movie connection with one or both of you. I don't know if that means one of you wrote Predator or like you were like a triple assistant grip or something on like a BYU TV production. But I've heard rumors of something.
I have actually helped on commercial shoots. So that used to be my previous employment. It wasn't necessarily like totally in Hollywood or anything like that. It was just some low-level commercial help.
Do you have the makeup brush that you go between takes on people? Is that what you were doing? Like,
I was actually holding the sound stick. So I was...
Oh, okay.
Clapping the stick.
Ooh.
You're
the clapper. Did you hold the, like, microphone?
I did.
Okay. Nice. So you got the, you're the clapper boomer guy.
Yes.
Nice. No, that's, you know what? That is so important. Because you know what? We always think about, like, how cool stuff looks. But if you can't hear the sound... You're tuning out, man.
We watch so many movies where the mic guy can't stay out of the way like Cobra, right? But so that's awesome.
Or how about the most recent Tenet, where you can hardly hear anything? You can hardly hear any of the dialogue.
Oh yeah,
that was nuts. I can't believe that.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, awesome. Well, I'm so glad to have you guys. So let's just jump right into this, huh? So, John, you and I have Aliens, and did we discuss who was going first? I'm going first. So Aliens, by the way, was a mutual decision between Sean and Tony. I'm glad they picked it. So here we go. Aliens has Ripley, and she has come out of stasis. Is she back on Earth? Like, her ship is rescued, and she's back on Earth. Is that right?
I do not think they ever make it back to Earth. So I believe she's just on another spacecraft.
So she's woken up and she's back on a spacecraft where the Weyland-Yutani board of directors is having a meeting, right? I guess. And so they talk about they're going to go back to the colony or the colony's just fine. And so this is a weird part for me because she says you can't, it's overrun with aliens. And then like the guy who seems to be totally in charge is like, there's a thriving colony there right now and they're doing just fine. And then like 30 seconds later, you have my first of the two dads. Who says, actually, we haven't had contact with him for a long time. I hope nothing bad happened. Right. So she decides
that was the weirdest conference meeting, by the way. You know, because she's like, we've been in here for 3 hours. Why won't you listen to me? And then it's like the last 30 seconds of the conference, of the meeting, the guy's like, oh, there's been a colony there for, 30 years or something. Like, I don't know how that didn't come up in the previous 3 hours of the meeting.
Yeah, well, so anyway, she feels compelled to go back, and so she does, but she's joined by the Weyland-Yutani Marines, I guess. Do they own their own band of Marines? And this is, like, the least disciplined band of Marines ever, but they're ready to kick some butt. So you have, who are Marines? You got, you got Hudson and
you got Hicks.
You got Velasquez?
Vasquez?
Yeah. Apone? Anyway, the good news is these guys may not be the most disciplined, but they each have a 700-pound gun that's like 5 feet long that they're ready to do business with. So they return to the planet. They get to the planet.
Planet from the original Alien, yes. LV-426.
Very good. Yeah. So, I'm assuming the aliens named it that. It's fine. So they go around.
The imagination we yeah, do.
They go around looking for the crew, and they can't find the crew for a while, and everything's fine. But then I think it's mentioned by who's the lieutenant that's running this operation from safety?
Gorman.
Yeah. He mentions, hey, you might not want to fire a bullet because it'll blow everything up. So that's important. Anyway.
He has to be very convinced of that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, they're below this nuclear reactor that has, like, this, like, hazardous flammable gas. And he's like, so?
Well, and then Ripley says,
we shouldn't fire. Yeah.
Some things in here don't react well to bullets. So, anyway, they do find some of the colonists, and they're all cocooned. And one of them has an alien that comes out of its chest, which they kind of had to do as a callback to the old movie. And so they find this room full of, like, all these eggs and pods. And actually, one of my favorite parts of the film is when it looks like it's just dark walls, right? But then the walls start to move, and it's the aliens. And they get their butts kicked a little bit. They fall back. Somewhere in the mix, they find a little feral girl named Newt. And she has a doll's head. And, John, I think that takes us about halfway.
Yeah, no, that's about halfway. So then the other half of the movie is just machine gun and aliens. That's the rest of the movie. Just, like, totally machine gun and aliens. Their little spaceship. Like, they have, like, a spaceship rowboat thing, right?
You can dig a little deeper than that.
Yeah, well, no, we'll get there. But they have a rowboat that docks with their orbiting spaceship in space. But that rowboat that's piloted by the other girl with them, that totally crashes because that has aliens on it. There are aliens everywhere. They're stranded. Newt kind of knows the way. And then my favorite is they're like, well, we could get over to, like, the satellite dish that, you know, remote in our other little robot spaceship kind of thing. And so they send the robot, because no one likes robots, right? They send the robot through, like, some kind of sewage tube in a pipe. He's like, I guess I only have to crawl 20 miles through here. So they send him through that. And in the meantime, they're like, okay, well, let's make the, you know, make do with what we got here. And the corporate guy, the skeezy corporate guy, I guess they're all corporate guys. It's weird that the corporation owns its own Marines, but at least they're not corporate, you know, conference room jerks. Because my two dad is like, okay, you know what? This is super important. Let's try not to blow this planet up. Rather, I'm going to sick the aliens on you so that you guys have aliens growing in you, specifically Sigourney Weaver and the little girl Newt. And then his plan becomes, okay, I'm going to freeze you guys in the cryogenics. We're going to go home, and then I'm going to kill everybody else, and then you guys are going to have aliens in you, and I'm going to become a rich man because, you know, whatever.
He wants to weaponize the aliens, right? Like, turn them into soldiers?
Yeah. Yeah, I always want to do that because they're apparently the perfect soldiers. But
yes, because they definitely do what they're told.
They're definitely trainable. You can see that throughout the movies.
Interesting. Okay, but the aliens converge. As usual, the Marines get picked off one by one. But Bishop flies in at the end. Newt gets captured. And Ripley says, here's, you know, something kind of interesting. Earlier in the movie, when the other Marines got captured, Ripley said, don't worry, they're already dead. You know, like 5 seconds later, she's like, they're already dead. But when Newt gets captured, her surrogate daughter, I guess because she feels guilty that she left her own daughter on Earth like 57 years earlier, she's like, no, I'm going after Newt. So she goes after Newt, which is good and heroic and everything. But also, you got to think, okay, well, I guess you could have saved those Marines, you know. Those other Marines from earlier.
She didn't have enough duct tape to go save the Marines. It was only when she found duct tape later,
She found the duct tape. She had the duct tape. Roy, do you remember when we were kids and we had all our toy guns and sometimes we would tape them all together?
We would always tape them all together.
we're like Ripley. We're like Ripley and Aliens. That's what we would say. Ripley finds the alien queen, and this alien queen is different than all these other aliens that are hatching around. And now I have an alien franchise question. In the first movie, was the alien queen just on the planet, but just in the background that we never saw then? She was, like, the alien queen was already there?
I think this comes back to unanswerable questions.
Okay.
Where did the queen essentially come from? Was there like an alien queen, like facehugger creature? Was there already one there? I am going to take us down a bit of a rabbit hole later in dealing with this situation, but okay. Continue.
Okay.
So my question is, when the alien queen frees herself, does it hurt to tear her bajingo away from the birthing tube? That looks like about two yards of torn flesh.
There was an absolute wail as she wailed as that was being ripped from her, thorax, or I don't even know how you would properly say that, but that caused pain. There's no doubt about it. There was a lot of pain going on
right
all around right at that moment.
Is that just like a human like cervix being removed? I don't really know my you know.
And it just detached. There was no pulling. It seemed to she stepped forward and it did detach, and yeah, again.
See, I mean, that's part of the queen. But I thought that maybe, like, isn't this the, like, the tubing that the scientists in E.T. set up? You know? Like, you know, around Elliot and E.T.? Like, is that something that aliens do? Like a queen termite is like, all of her... I don't know. Anyway, I don't know anything about this fictional creature, but the point, though, is Ripley, she does save Newt, and they are in the egg chamber where all the young are, and Ripley kind of looks at the queen and is like, okay, these are your young, and the queen is like, all right, be cool. And you know what? Ripley was not cool.
She wasn't cool.
Ease down, Ripley. Ease down. Yeah.
So Ripley, once she got away, she pretty much killed the hostages. Pretty much like Castor Troy would do in Face Off. but anyway, they get back on the ship and everything's fine. Oh, except the alien like boarded the ship and cuts Bishop right in half.
Oh.
But then Ripley punches her to death on a Rock'em Sock'em robot power loader. Alien falls off the thing. Ripley opens up the airlock to space, and at that point it's no longer Ripley against the alien queen. It's Ripley against the vacuum of the entirety of space, and Ripley still wins.
Is it possible to hold on?
I would think that
the vacuum of
yeah.
space,
because it's not just wind; it's pretty much you against the universe, right?
we are talking about Ellen Ripley here, though. I mean, the baddest,
very
woman
true.
She's
possibly
great.
Ever walk the earth.
Yeah, she taped all those guns together, and yeah,
yeah.
Just, like, I always think of that.
I mean,
so you think more so than Sarah Connor?
Ooh.
I mean, that's a.
If those
That's
two could do pull up competition,
yeah,
we should. I wonder what James Cameron would think. You know, he created Sarah Connor, and he bolstered Ripley. So, I wonder who he'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would just guess it would be Sarah Connor.
Well, and he was married to the actress
Linda Hamilton.
Yeah. Really,
Linda Hamilton. So
well, then
I mean,
he's biased.
He's gonna be biased. I mean, and he also gave Linda Hamilton the better underwear.
That's
so
true. I did notice that we had the Kyle Reese crossover in this film.
Yes.
Yep. Yes, Michael Biehn.
Yeah.
Last second decision, by the way, because they hired another guy, but like he got sick or something, and so like I think Michael Biehn said, because all the actors, this would be so fun, you know, this is like one of those things. Like being an actor, I think would be really hard because I can't memorize stuff, you know, it's just really tricky, right? But like one thing that I read is all the actors in Aliens, they got to like all the Marines got to decorate their own armor for what their character. What they think their character would decorate their armor with. And Michael Biehn was like, well, mine was sort of cool, but, you know, the previous guy, the guy who walked, like, he had to pick up the previous guy's armor. They couldn't, like, give him new armor for his own character, because like I think like he was already filmed from the back or something, and so he's like, yeah, I wouldn't have painted this target on my chest, pretty much, I think is what he said.
So you, Cortese Bars, I know you guys have a lot to say about this movie, but I have to, I just things before we get schooled here. So my memories of this movie, I haven't seen Aliens in a really long time, so my memories of this film I really owe to a Saturday Night Live skit with what's her name?
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver was the host.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
And who plays the Paxton part? Is it Dana Carvey?
Dana Carvey was Bill Paxton, yeah.
Yeah, like, we're
Shredded
wheat, dude. Yeah.
We're shredded wheat. Yeah. And like at some point she takes off her her jumpsuit and someone says, "No one wants to see your underwear, Ripley." but yeah, so that informed my memories of this movie. And then the other one was, for the longest time I've been yelling at the top of my lungs that Alien is a horror film and Aliens is an action film, but I'm kind of convinced that Aliens is still a horror film.
Yeah, it was a lot less action-y than I remember. Like, the aliens don't really pop in until, like, an hour in, right?
Yeah.
And that first sequence was so great when they were coming out of the walls. And I remember them just being out in the open and just getting slaughtered. And they are slaughtered. They are kind of wusses in this movie. like, more so than the first movie. The first movie, they couldn't even kill one. They're killing tons this time, but they're still, like, in the shadows, you know, they kind of have the Michael Myers thing where it's like, oh, it's behind you and we see it, but you don't kind of thing.
And you have the whole, like, proximity alert, right, where they're like, they're in the room with us right now, right? So, so anyway, just that's kind of my background with the film. So, Sean and Tony, you guys, what do you want to talk about with this film?
Okay, I'm the big Predator and Alien universe fan. Like, I'm a actually probably a diehard fan.
I'm also a diehard fan. That's a great movie.
Just a nice throwback to John McTiernan in there.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I'm a huge fan.
If anyone cares about that.
These were actually both my selection.
Oh.
And then I let Sean throw one in. And his selection was obviously Batman. But I just have always been a fan of these movies. Starting with Predator, we had a recorded copy on VHS, and it was up at my family's cabin. I would pop this in. I think it was recorded from HBO. And then I discovered that we had Alien on VHS as well, and was just enthralled with Alien. A nice change of pace, and it was just downright awesome for me. And then I had talked to my dad, and he said that there's a sequel, and so we went down to the Ken's Cache down in Oakley, Utah, and we found Aliens and drove back and watched it that night. And you know, I think I was 8 or 9 years old at this time, and These were my two movies growing up. I mean, I didn't really watch Star Wars or like Indiana Jones. It was Aliens and Predator. Those were my films. So that's kind of...
So when the Aliens versus Predator movie came out, like, did you just die that day? Like, was that just too much?
He did. So, he absolutely did. But make no mistake about it, that he was losing his mind.
So I was losing my mind on the lead up to the film. Let's just say I had my qualms with the film. For starters, it was PG-13, which was a big mistake. And but I was super excited leading up to it. Did see it, had my disappointments with it. However, it's still an Alien and Predator movie, so it works for me in my book. And the reviled Alien versus Predator Requiem, who everybody hates, I actually love, so I'm okay with all of it.
I'll have to check that one out. I missed that one, actually. I saw the first one, but I didn't see Requiem.
According to everybody else, it's missable. Okay. However, to me, it's not.
Well, you're the subject matter expert on this, so I'm going to have to take your word, you know, with just a higher degree than most other people.
Please do. I fully recommend it.
So Alien vs. Predator Requiem is like Alien vs. Predator, except it happens in a small Colorado town.
Correct, yes.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay.
So the end of Alien vs. Predator, I guess the first one, one of the Predators has actually had a face hugger around it, and an alien hatches from its chest. So in AVP Requiem, we now have an alien that is kind of morphed with the DNA of a predator. And so it's like a predalien is what they call it. So it's like a predator mixed with an alien, and it's super cool.
Okay, that leads me to a question. Cool. I have a question about, you know, just the biology of these aliens. And this is, you know, something that we were wondering about when we were watching this. So, like, the facehugger doesn't just stick an egg into people. Like, whatever the facehugger hugs, that depends on what type of alien comes out. So, like, if it was, like, some other species, it's a completely different alien that pops out.
Yes, and it takes on the characteristics of, like, its host.
Right. So, like, all these aliens that we're fighting in the movie Aliens, those are characteristics of humans. So is it saying that these are our children? Like, what? Okay, yeah. If I wanted to get really, you know, film school on this, is the movie saying, it's like, okay, this is who we are. We're bloodthirsty people who, you know, who consume, like, a corporation. And that's you know, so, but if there was some, like, Planet of the Pillow people that the alien, like, face hugged, then they'd be like, maybe they'd be kind of cooler, you know, be like, yeah, whatever, we're pillow people.
John, don't ruin this movie with science.
Yeah, this is, well, my science. Yeah,
that can lead us to Alien 3, where the face hugger actually hugs a dog. And it's like a dog alien, so it's running around on all fours.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that I've never seen Alien 3, actually.
You haven't?
No.
Okay, so then if Ripley had ever been face-hugged, the alien that comes out would have walked around in its underwear.
No question about it.
Okay, well,
asking
good.
About the Keymaster. So, okay, but Mike, because we were asking, like, we were wondering, what if Bishop got face hugged? Like, has that ever happened? Because,
oh, like, it'd be like Brundle Flypod.
Right. It'd be this weird biological robot that just spews white cess everywhere.
Yeah, and would it be acidic? Because it looks like mayonnaise just being exploding all over the place. So would the blood curdle? What would, I mean, how would that
curdle?
Again, there's a question. Yeah, if it had attacked Bishop, who knows what could have come out of that?
This mayonnaise monster. Like, if you don't like mayonnaise, then stay away from the Bishop hybrid alien.
So, speaking of the acid, can I ask Vasquez, did she get acided to death, or did she just lose a limb? Did she die? I know she got acid.
She grenaded herself.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
She shot the alien above her, and that spewed acid on her, so she was pretty wounded. And then good old Gorman comes back to I guess, try to rescue her. And Gorman ran out of bullets. Unreliable Gorman.
I hate it.
Runs out of bullets, and so he just...
Gorman.
He just pops open a grenade and...
So well, at that point, Vasquez had to know it was all over. I mean, she had definitely lost a limb. It was eating away at her, and then it was all over. Even with the ripped off Rambo attire. Speaking about getting to pick your costume, she had totally ripped off Rambo's headband and the whole thing. It was over.
She lost her main flamenco limb, I think. So
yeah, so the guitar career was over after. coast.
She was done. Yeah.
So the actress who plays Vasquez is actually in Terminator 2, and she is the mom that get. She's the stepmom of John Connor.
The one with the blade fingers who blades her the stepdad in the eye. You know, when it's she's
dead,
T-1000. Yeah, okay. yeah. I guess, you know, this was good at the time. I think, you know, there's a lot of, like, recontextualizing of, like, her casting, you know. Because what I read is they cast her because she was an American living in England where the movie was filmed. And she just has no trace of Latin heritage at all. And so they pretty much, they gave her brown contacts, they kind of bronzed her up a little bit. But she's Jewish, I believe. So, yeah.
They never accused her of being a man.
That's a great line, though. That's a great line.
That is. Killed me on rewatch.
Yeah, I that's one thing I always remember. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, no. It's, yeah, no one would ever consider Hudson a man, of course, as she points out.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I think you said that you had like a aliens rabbit hole you wanted to explore.
This has a lot to do with Ridley Scott as well. Are we ready for this rabbit hole?
I'm ready.
Right now? I'm bracing myself now, yes.
I'm ready.
Okay. Ridley Scott, in my personal opinion, is an extremely overrated director.
Wow.
Extremely overrated.
Here it comes.
Here we go.
Obviously, he's got hits. You know, we've got Alien, we've got Blade Runner. I mean, we've got Thelma and Louise, and then Gladiator. And then The Martian. But, I mean, there are a lot of misses. And then nowadays, you see a TV show or a new movie coming out, and it says executive producer Ridley Scott. Does that move the needle for anybody?
What's that show on HBO? Raised by Wolves? I watched the first episode of that, and it was really good. But I didn't finish, so I guess you're right.
When he did Body of Lies with Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe, and I remember seeing the trailer for that, I was going nuts. I couldn't believe how could this be not amazing? And I remember being halfway through that in the theater, checking my watch, going, man, when is this over? And then there was, do you remember the one American Gangster with Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe, where Denzel plays the drug lord?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember, and for me too, that was just another one made that I had probably overhyped, but I remember going, oh man, this is a tough look for my guy Ridley.
So I can accept that Ridley Scott is top heavy for sure. So I mean, Blade Runner, we confirmed last year on our podcast, is still one of my very favorite sci-fi of all time,
without a doubt.
And then Alien, of course, is such an incredible movie. But there maybe isn't a lot after that,
you
right?
You know what I really liked, and this might be controversial. I liked Prometheus quite a bit.
I thought Prometheus was all right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Prometheus is going to be getting brought up in this little rant I'm about to go on. So,
okay.
I'm still braced, man. Okay, go ahead.
The screenplay for the original Alien was actually written by a man named Dan O'Bannon.
Yeah.
Sole screenwriting credits for the film. It was all his. He actually was inspired by the works of H.R. Giger. Have you seen any of his artwork?
Yeah.
It sounds so familiar.
It's like weird Metroid type, you know, weird stuff. I think Giger was going to work on the, like, Jodorowsky's Dune as well. It's just weird, like, combination of biological, technological stuff.
Yeah, and it's like it's pretty like sexual as well. Like it's super. So he was inspired by some of those artwork. And if you actually look at Giger's artwork, you can actually see like the early renderings of like the alien and like some of like the backgrounds of even in this movie Aliens. You know, you can see where they got the inspiration for a lot of that.
Yeah.
So, following along with that, O'Bannon was the one who suggested that they bring on Giger to help design the alien and the alien world. And Ridley pushed back a little bit with the studio, thinking that it was a little too grotesque. However, they compromised and Giger came aboard. It's pretty much their world, like their brainchild. And Ridley Scott just came in and obviously directed one heck of a movie, but I digress.
Too much credit.
Possibly. So, Dan O'Bannon has now since passed away. They are now calling, like, Ridley, like, the godfather of aliens. They're almost allowing him to do whatever he wants with the movies going forward. And so he was brought on to make a prequel trilogy, which is where Prometheus comes in and which is where Alien Covenant comes in. I don't know if you guys have had the honor of seeing Alien Covenant.
Nope. Yeah, Fassbender makes out with himself. It's awesome.
Yes. Yes. That's actually an interesting scene. So, without going into too much detail, you know, because I mean, I could try to explain the whole story, all the backstory, like the black ooze from Prometheus leading into, you know, the black ooze from Alien Covenant. But
does it explain the black ooze from Batman Returns? Because that's a question coming up.
That's immediately where I went. There must be a Stan Winston tie in there somewhere.
Yeah,
it has to be Stan Winston. Anyway, it comes to the point where Michael Fassbender's character David uses that black ooze, which is like an organic compound, which was created to kind of morph DNA. So like morphs anybody's DNA that comes in contact with it. And so he uses it in Alien Covenant on Elizabeth Shaw. She was the main girl in Prometheus. So he uses the ooze on her eggs, which is what creates the face hugger.
Okay.
I would have to go in an even deeper rabbit hole to try to explain all the ins and outs of how that works.
So would you say Giger and O'Bannon are kind of like the Albert Goldman of the Aliens world, where Albert Goldman should have been the fifth Beatle who plays the trombone?
I would say that.
I third that, absolutely.
To finish out my point, so what Ridley Scott is proposing here is that David created the aliens.
Hmm.
Because of that ooze. Therefore, so if they were created in a like some kind of lab or whatnot, how do they come to reproduce, or how do they come to have a queen, you know, giving birth in aliens? Like, are they a species where James Cameron had kind of created them to be a species and, you know, having the queen, and the queen is the one giving birth rather than being created in a lab? Like, yeah. In the movie Alien, is where's Michael Fassbender? Is he off just making these eggs?
Could have happened when he made out with himself. That could have been the immaculate conception.
I feel like it almost contradicts the movie Aliens, as well as all the other Alien versus Predator contradicts. So it just contradicts everything, in my personal opinion, as well as like even like the comic books, it contradicts, and just all these, you know, these vast compilations of works that have been done around the Alien universe, it almost contradicts them from being species, and they're just lab rats from David.
Well,
yeah, and that's also, that's, it's kind of lame. I mean, like, what's scarier? We accidentally created an alien, or space is as scary as hell, and there's things like aliens out there.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's, that's scarier, but I mean, I also see the point of, hey, we need to watch what we do. It's like there are too many points to be made, and they're kind of opposite points. But we never got our – we never saw Darth Vader created. As far as I know, Ridley Scott was making three prequel movies, you know? Like, we never saw our aliens become Darth Vader, you know, like the three prequel Star Wars movies, because there was supposed to be another Prometheus Alien Covenant movie, and I assume that will never happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen either. So I would like that answer to be solved. However, it just kind of feels like they were created in a lab rather than having them be species.
And I don't need that answer. So, like, this is my problem with so many, like, 1950s horror films, right? That it's like they spend 60% of the film with science explaining how, you know, because we're stupid, we created a monster with science. I don't care.
You
like,
know
I just
you're
really
stupid.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I already know I'm stupid. So, and I don't need the moralizing, right? I already know that we're doing stupid stuff. I just love a good scary movie, and I think the Alien is a really good horror icon, and it does take away from it to say, oh, because we're irresponsible, we accidentally made it, and then you kind of need that wah wah noise, right?
That's kind of why I have a little bit of beef with Ridley Scott. I mean, if it's canon, they officially were made in a lab, then it is what it is. And as Jeff Goldblum says, you know, life finds a way.
Yeah. There you go.
From Jurassic Park, you know, life finds a way. That's my rabbit hole. I don't know how many people are able to follow that, but...
Tony, can I say I loved watching this movie again. It had been so long since I'd seen this film. And this was like... during that era where like VCRs were new and movies were new, and my mom didn't know what rated R meant, and she didn't watch movies with us. She just plugged it in and it babysat us, and we watched all of these movies, right? Man, I love this film. The budget was only $18 million.
Like, wow, that's it?
Pretty crazy low budget.
That's true?
Wow. Yeah.
And we'll get to Predator, but Predator's budget? $15 million. $15 million.
Really? 14 of that went to Arnold.
Yeah.
No question about it.
That went to Sonny Landham.
Oh, man, Sonny Landham.
Oh.
So
Billy!
Good. Are we ready for that?
I think we are. Are you guys ready to move into Predator?
I'm ready to go into Predator.
So before we start Predator, I have the same question I had about Aliens. And is Predator a horror film? And it, like, when I went into Google, I typed, is Predator? And the first thing that came up was a horror film. And I kind of like halfway through Predator, I thought, I think this is a horror film.
Yeah, it's a remake of The Invisible Man.
Oh, well, with more laser.
Yeah, Invisible Man with a laser. Yeah.
I think it can be considered a horror film. I think it feels like an action movie first.
Yeah.
With like elements of horror.
Yeah, so because you've got kind of like your slasher killer, right? But also, like, there's some intense scenes, right? And you have the element of, like, there's this killer that you can't see, right? So you got kind of the Michael Myers thing going on, right? So, but anyway, I'll stop with that, and I'll just let you dig into Predator.
Hey, Tony, are you doing Predator?
Yes, oh, I'm doing Predator. All and right. then that'll be followed by Sean's choice of Batman Returns.
Beautiful.
Boss.
Okay. The movie opens. Obviously, we see the spacecraft. Then we see Predator. We get a great look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Dutch, as he will be referred to now, in that nice red polo. You know, he's got the that red polo.
Has anyone ever looked cooler than that? I just had to say.
Really quick, this is going to give something away, but Bill Duke looked cooler in that.
Oh my! Yeah, that's true. in that shark skin suit he came out with. What a badass!
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, sorry, Tone.
No, you're good. So we've got Dutch. You know, he's got that stogie in, and he's coming in to meet a longtime friend of his, who is Carl Weathers, and we'll now be referring to Carl Weathers as Dylan. And so he goes in to meet his old friend Dylan, and we get that iconic, "Dylan, you son of a bitch."
Yes.
You
know?
Just iconic. Iconic. I mean, that handshake, and where they're both flexing their muscles.
Yeah. Yes.
And I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No.
And so we come to find out that Dylan works for the CIA now, and he would like Dutch and his team to go on a rescue mission to help a squad that had been previously shot down. And so Dutch and his team are going in for a rescue mission of this team into the jungles of Central America. So Dutch and his team flying in, we get that great scene in the helicopter. They fly in thinking it's a rescue mission, and they arrive, and they're searching out the terrain in, you know, the Central America country or jungle side. They're searching out the terrain, and they start coming across bodies that have been skinned alive. It's shaking all the members, you know, all the team members to their core. You know, we've got Hawkins, we've got Poncho, we've got Blaine, we've got
I'm sorry, everyone gets a cool name, and then you've got Blaine.
He's a household appliance. That's not a name. Yeah.
Who am I missing? You know, Hawkins, Poncho, Blaine,
Mac, Billy.
Okay. Then we get that great shootout down at the compound. Scouring through the paperwork, Dutch realizes Dylan was using them to extract the information from this compound. And Dutch is very upset with this. You know, he has another iconic line that his team is not assassins. They are the team's not assassins. They are, you know, a rescue team. So moving on with that, we can see that they appear to be being followed. You know, we get the great shot of the, you know, the heat coming off the body, the infrared vision, and then the team starts getting picked off one by one until we finally get the showdown between Arnold and the Predator. Dutch comes out on top, and we get the final laugh, and the Predator music begins, and that's how the film ends.
And then Arnold outruns a nuclear blast.
Yeah.
Yes.
By diving a pond.
Yeah. Yeah. He outponds a nuclear blast. No, it's great. I wanna ask, like, one thing that I was concerned about, because I think what they say, right, is, okay, this is just a sportsman, right? He's just, like, big game hunting. He's like a trust fund jerk on his home planet, and you know that picture of like Donald Jr. and Eric Trump, you know, like in the outback, you know, posing with the animals they shot or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
like that's Predator, right? but Arnold says he's like, you know, put that gun down, Elizabeth. What's the girl's name? Put that gun down,
Anna.
Anna, yeah, put that gun down, Anna, because, you know, he only shoots people with weapons. But then later, when Poncho's just being hobbling away, injured, Predator kills Poncho. So I think, was Arnold wrong about that? Is Predator just killing everybody?
No, so, Arnold was correct in that. She never had a gun to begin with. Therefore, she was never a threat to the Predator to begin with. Poncho did have a gun, and he was always a threat. That's why he ended up getting killed the way that he was killed.
And if I remember right, the Predator, that's kind of his whole thing, is that he won't kill you unless... If he only kills for sport, so if it's not going to be a contest, he doesn't want any part of it, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be some form of challenge.
Yeah, which is why at the end he removes all of his gear to have it like a hand on to have fisticuffs with Earl. Yeah.
Which is a really even match. Like, Arnold almost, he almost does nothing, right? Like, he gets beat up really good.
I really love what Arnold does, because doesn't Arnold, like, Arnold somehow builds a double trap where he crawls through a hole, and he's like, come on, crawl past me, because I have a trap set up here. And the
Kill me, I'm here, yeah, kill yeah, me!
Yes,
come
yes.
On. And so
Predator goes around the other way, but Arnold has another trap set around that way, which I love. And the trap is just a log, but it works.
Arnold spends like 20 minutes creating all these traps, and it feels like he doesn't get to use any of them, right? Like, except for the big log, and the big log's pretty effective. So now this film, though, like the cast, like this ensemble cast for this action film is incredible, right? And adding Jesse the Body Ventura is like as good as two of any other action movie stars, right? So he is so good in this film. And did you guys watch the documentary, the If It Bleeds We Can Kill It?
No.
Yep. I have seen it, yes.
Man, I love watching Jesse the Body in that documentary, because I don't think he's acting in this film, right?
There's no way.
Yeah,
as they're getting out of the helicopter at the beginning, as we were just talking about, I mean, he comes out in an MTV t-shirt that's like a near belly shirt, and you know that wasn't a wardrobe. Jesse showed up and was just like, I'm wearing this, don't give a damn, here it is.
Yep. And I think the documentary briefly alludes to the fact that you couldn't really tell him what to do, right? There was no directing Jesse the Body.
No.
Well, from what I understand, like, Sonny Landham is the one you couldn't tell what to do, like, because they actually hired a bodyguard for Sonny Landham.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it wasn't because, you know, he needed protection. It's like, okay, this bodyguard has to be on Sonny Landham all the time to prevent Sonny Landham from beating everybody up. Like, that was his job. Yeah.
He's like Gary Busey, but with the capacity to actually hurt people,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes, it was not for Sonny's protection. It was for the cast protection.
Yes.
Oh man, this.
So Shane Black's just huddling in the corner as Sonny's about ready to pepper him with blows, feeling his ham sandwich.
That's just so. It's so funny, like, because even Shane Black is kind of like semi-buff in this, and it seems like such an '80s just man. Just testosterone trip, because you have all these bodybuilders that are waking up at 3 in the morning to outdo each other's arms because they have to have the biggest arms on the screen. And also one of them is just the writer of Lethal Weapon. Also this guy who wrote Lethal Weapon. He's one of us too.
That's why they actually brought Shane Black in. They brought him in to kind of work on the script a bit, to kind of punch it up, add some jokes. Mm-hmm. And I think the only jokes that he added were the two that he said during the movie.
Yeah. Just punched up the dialogue for himself.
Yeah.
We're going to bring you on to make yourself look better in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that he wrote those jokes and nobody was willing to say them. And so they were like, Shane, why don't you just come on in and you can say the jokes.
Oh, man. So can I ask, I got a question about the Predator's heat vision, which I think is a cool visual effect, but it seems like it's not great.
I was going to add
like,
this, yeah.
Like the definition that he has with his vision is really poor.
Why can't he see noses or eyeballs?
And why can't he see the heat from noses and eyeballs?
Yeah.
In some ways, I guess maybe they had to make the Predator have one semi-fatal flaw, and I guess that would be his vision. Otherwise, he was just... I mean, it was already an indestructible force, but maybe that would be why they did that, is to... You know, he's got bad vision. I don't know. To give the human some sort of chance, especially if he takes the mask off.
Yeah, and then he takes his mask off, and his vision's even worse. There's no contrasting colors anymore.
He's legal, at that point, he's legally blind.
You know, it's comforting to me to know that these like crazy aliens are like they're part in like Mr. Magoo. You know, it's like, okay, don't worry, they don't see too good. So
yeah. If you cover yourself in mud, he can't see you, and you're going to be fine. He's going to walk right by it, but he will go for the land crab.
You know, and I still don't like Predator, because another thing, because he's like, oh, you know, sporting chance and doing all this stuff, you know, and I only kill people with weapons. But also, I kind of think it's sort of douchey to just be hiding in your an invisibility field the whole time. Because, you know, if he doesn't get him on his, you know, the first time, if he doesn't like get him on the swipe, then he just lasers him to death, you know, from the comfort of his own invisibility field. I just don't respect Predator, is what I'm saying.
if he's gonna do that, I mean, in the sporting chance of it, then at least, you know, let the guys see you up until maybe he didn't respect them enough. Maybe it was a respect factor.
Hmm.
So are you saying that when Predator rips a guy's skull out and the spinal cord remains intact, that he hasn't earned it?
I think maybe because in that moment Billy stands out there, cuts his own chest with a machete, and maybe he did respect him enough to kill him that violently. It's hard to get inside the mind of the Predator, and I don't think that's a place I want to be. I think I'd rather be, if I had the choice, I think I'd like to be in the body's mind. Only because then I would never be scared of anything.
One thing's for sure, the Predator has been watching some Twisted Sister music videos, because he rocks that mesh shirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And no question about that. That the mesh is just it is skin tight. that must be in fashion with the hedge fund crowd on his planet.
his shirt doubles as like the trap from Endor that they caught like Han and Luke, the Ewoks caught Han and Luke in. Like he could just take off his mesh shirt and set up this, like, you know, this springing trap in a bag kind of thing. Yeah, a net.
Yeah. No. Yes. Absolutely. No. Yeah. The mesh, and Tony, you would be able to speak more on this. Is the Predator universe, isn't this Predator like the only one that has the mesh, or do other Predators?
Oh no. There's all different kinds of Predators. There's all different kind. They wear different masks based on. You know, the masks is almost like, it's kind of like they have to earn different masks based on, you know, their skills, or like based on their kills, who they've killed. Like they're very like ritualistic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking this Predator, he was planning to go right to the club after his Earth stint. It was like an immediate appointment right to the club. Yeah.
As soon as his whole plan was, as soon as he wiped out Arnold, he was going to board that ship and head right back to the club.
Yeah.
And get his new mask and LASIK, maybe.
80s night. 80s night at the Omni.
80s night.
Oh, man. Well, I want to thank you guys for picking this movie, and I've got a ton to say about this movie when we get to awards.
I have got a lot of awards for Predator. Yeah,
I love Predator so much.
The biggest problem actually was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh yes.
Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally cast to be the Predator. You know, they called him the Muscles from Brussels. You know, I mean, he was, you know. I mean, he's probably got many names, but he's fresh off the plane coming into Hollywood hoping to land a role, hoping to, you know, become the next big thing in Hollywood. And he hears about this role of the Predator, and he is, you know, obviously enamored that he's got the chance to fight Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so he's thinking this is great. He shows up on set, and they've put him in this just monstrosity of a suit.
It's like a styrofoam lobster.
Yes,
first it's this orange, styrofoam, just he looks like a bug. and it's bad, but they were using that for motion capture, and I don't think Jean-Claude knew what motion capture was at all. And so he did not understand it at all, and he mentioned several times that he looked like a cockroach, or he looked like a bloody rat, or he looked like an effing chicken. You know, there were many iterations of problems that he had with the suit. When they showed him the actual suit that he was going to wear, which was actually an iteration before the suit that they actually ended on, Van Damme was just complaining the entire time. Here's actually a quote from him. "The costume took about 20 minutes to put on. It was thick rubber, and I couldn't see anything. There was just a small piece to breathe through. I needed cables to move my jaw and head, and it was hard to keep my balance. They wanted me to make a big jump, and I told them, it's impossible from that height. I know my limitations, and I'll break my legs." So he is complaining this entire time, and the producers actually were in an interview, and they were talking about the time that they met Jean-Claude. Joel Silver, who's one of the producers, he said that Jean-Claude was constantly coming into his office, jumping in the air and showing me his moves, begging for work. he was a nobody then. He didn't have any credit, and so they finally just said, like, oh, he'd be a great Predator. And so when he first met Joel Silver, John Claude asked him, he's like, are you Joel Silver? And Joel said yes. And then he said, well, look at this. And he jumped in the air and did the splits with his leg straight out, and his crotch was at eye level.
Here, Joel, look at this.
Yeah. So, and this was just like in the middle of the hallway. So just think about, you know, the muscles from Brussels just jumping up, doing the splits on two desks. Just two desks sprayed out, just doing the splits, showing off his crotch. And
his bundle right at Joel's eye level.
Yes. And Joel was 6 feet, so think about how high off the ground he was.
I love how many times that comes up. Like, that's always the first thing you think of when you think of Jean-Claude Van Damme, because he does it in a movie, and then all the parodies of Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, people do that is kind of a joke. Oh, he's the guy who does the splits. But it's awesome to hear that it wasn't just once that Van Damme did that. That was apparently his move. You know, that's his calling card always.
That's how he lands a role.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what a relief, though, that he was replaced by, because, like, he's like, what is he, like 5'7", 5'6"?
Yeah.
So the guy who replaced him is like 7'2"?
Yes.
So I mean, can you imagine like a 5.5-foot Predator fighting Arnold Schwarzenegger?
See, I mean, because the whole idea of Predator, and it makes more sense with the invisibility stuff, is that it wasn't some monstrous creature. It was, you know, this sly, sneak around kind of guy, which I think, you know, does make sense. But I think for the reason you said, it's like, okay, no, there has to be some intimidation. And to Jean-Claude's credit, as much as, you know, we like to kind of hate on that guy, and, you know, it does sound like he was whining just a bit, you know, about, you know, not, you know, getting to, not getting the recognition, you know, and kind of being pouty and whiny on the set. But I'm sure they learned a lot from that, because I think he did have a point. Okay, I can't see in this suit. I'm going to break my legs. I think they made it a little bit easier for Kevin Peter Hall when it came around.
Oh, yeah, they completely redid the suit after he exited, right? So,
yes.
And
he exited, and they brought in Stan Winston to redesign the whole suit and redesign everything, and so we get the, you know, the Predator that we have here today. So
Jean-Claude of course went on to make many great movies, several with really great mullets, so plenty for him to be proud of. He should be very happy with himself.
Do we have anything else with Predator?
I'm good until awards.
I'm
good as well.
Okay.
All right. That means, Sean, it's all yours.
Beautiful. All right. So Batman Returns. We open up at Cobblepot Manor. We pan in. We see two of the Gotham City elite staring out the window into the snowy night. We hear the cries from the other room, and then an absolute wail. And it sounds like something horrific has happened, and without a doubt it has. Fast forward, you see this black cage shaking, the two parents taking a swig of two martini swigs, and you see the family cat get ripped into the black crib. The parents walk out into the snow and dump this child down into the sewer, into a pond that is going to lead us into the sewer. Fast forward as the carrier floats down into the sewer. We fast forward 33 years later to Gotham City. It's Christmas time again. Beam up to what is known as Shrek's, where we meet a corrupt tycoon named Max Schreck, who is secretly trying to hoard all of the city's power. Played by none other than Christopher Walken, who does an absolutely outstanding job, as I'm sure we will discuss. And that is where we meet Selena Kyle, who is his secretary. Before long, we discover that the child who was dumped down into the sewer has become a human penguin who has been plotting to attack Gotham City and destroy and kill all of its firstborn sons in the same way as some sort of revenge tactic to try to make up from what his parents did to him. And we get one of the most iconic shots of the film, where Michael Keaton, who is back to reprise his role as Batman, is sitting there brooding in Wayne Manor, and the bat symbol shines through. He looks up, and it's time to go to work. He goes.
I love how all his spare time is just brooding. Like, he wasn't in any business or anything. He wasn't watching the news. Yeah.
Wayne is always brooding.
Broods Wayne, yeah, more like.
Wayne is when, and Keaton mastered the brooding. So Batman goes, attacks, saves the city at least temporarily, but the Red Triangle gang and the Penguin has been unleashed, and him and Mac, he goes after Max Schreck, who in the chaos of Batman stopping the Red Triangle gang, Max Schreck falls down a sewer, goes ahead, and him and the Penguin come to an agreement that they're going to come together and form this alliance to take over the city. Selina Kyle is digging around in Schreck's office, comes across some things she shouldn't see. She gets pushed out the window, falls about six stories, well, maybe even higher than that, about through six of those Max Schreck logo with the logo. She, you know what I'm talking about?
The awnings. Logo.
She, the awnings. Yeah.
Awnings. Yes. Falls through those. Cats attack her. She becomes Catwoman, and insanity ensues. It continues. She blows up Max Schreck's office, and Batman is forced to fight on three fronts: the Penguin, Catwoman, and Schreck in some way, as Bruce Wayne and Batman. He breaks out the bat boat and goes, and as the Max Schreck and the Penguin try to get Oswald Cobblepot elected mayor, which is a twist that all in itself, and that ends up going awry. In the insanity, Max leaves the Penguin. The Penguin ends up going on a complete hate spree and has no more moral compass, just wants to destroy everything. Batman comes in, saves the day, stops the annihilation of Gotham City. And all the while, there's a lot of sexual tension between him and Catwoman, an interesting situation all in itself. As fate would have it, Batman stops the Penguin. Catwoman escapes. We're not sure whether or not there's still a love interest at the end, and Christmas is saved.
Yay!
Batman.
Thank you for saving Christmas, Batman. Yeah.
So that is a quick synopsis.
Very good.
There's much more that I would like to get into, but I didn't want to give it all away in that.
So let me ask real quick. The Bat Boat, is that a separate thing he has, or is that the Batmobile repurposed after the Batmobile lost all that weight?
Oh, that's got to be a separate thing. I think that's one of the great things that brooding Bruce gets to do. That he must be when he's brooding, he must be sitting there thinking of new ways to spend his money, and I think it's a separate Bat Boat.
So I thought the Bat. We should take a poll, because I thought the Bat Boat was the Batmobile after. With the sides cut off because it went down the alley. So we repurposed it.
Oh, I think that's possibly was. An interesting
take that I've never even thought about. And I've seen this movie over the course of my life, not even at least 100 times, if we're talking about from me being 5 years old till now. Because in the same way you were talking about, JR, my parents were very much the same when we were younger. It was like I was the only one who even knew how to work the VCR. And so at five, I was putting in you know, Batman Returns, Edward Scissorhands, Batman. So it was just a Tim Burton universe for a five-year-old, which is, again, what made me so weird to this day. I credit that. That's why I'm so strange.
Batman Returns is PG-13, but I wonder if it's more disturbing than Predator. It's like more psychologically just weird.
That was my huge takeaway was, Tony, you go ahead and say it. I know you were going to say the same thing.
Something that I didn't recognize as a child that I have come to recognize now, there is so much like sexual innuendo coming from all of those characters that, like, you don't pick up as a kid, but you totally pick it up now. And this story that, like, Tim Burton created it's hard to even, like, explain the synopsis for. Like, it's a circus.
It's a mess.
Yeah. And that's why he didn't get to direct the third one is because it was so dark and the studio was not thrilled. I mean, they were okay with it originally, but it was the reception, especially from parents. Like, I was doing some background when I was brushing up on this, and it said that they had all these partnerships and with like McDonald's and everything. And then after the movie came out, all the parents were like, they were picketing and rioting because of like how dark it was and how like with the sexuality and Catwoman being in skin tight leather and all those things. And so parents were fuming.
Well, what's wrong with being sexy? So anyway, the movie made $267 million. So it made
it was a total success.
Yeah. So I will say, I guess if you're McDonald's, it's hard to sell the character glass of Penguin with like the black goo coming out of his mouth. Right. Thinking about this movie, and this is a fairly adultish movie, but I kind of think of all the Batman movies that we have, and really, it goes downhill so fast after these two. The Schumacher movies, I just can't handle them at all, even though I really like... what's her head in the third one? Is it Chase Meridian?
Meridian.
Meridian, right?
Chase Meridian.
I thought that that she did a great job. But anyway, so I think Tim Burton later in his career said, I will never do a sequel again because of Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Which is odd because I know that he has also said that of the two Batman movies he did, he preferred this one.
Yeah, he actually said that the first – he went on record saying that he felt the first one was darker, which to me, having seen the same thing, like I said, in the rotation of my life, it was Batman, Edward Scissorhands, and Batman Returns just on a loop. So it was like – and to me, this one to me is much darker because in the other one, you've got Nicholson who, while he plays a psychopath, there's still like a charisma and a jovial, excitement to him, and colorful, you know, the colorful part of the Joker, where this whole movie is black.
Yeah, there's
black and white without being black and white. There's snow and everything. Yeah.
There's nothing charismatic about the Penguin.
Yeah.
No, just him grunting, and then he's got Ridley Scott's black ooze coming out of his mouth,
It's a tough look.
You guys will get
it's a tough look.
You get a kick out of this. So in the research, I was listening to an interview with Danny DeVito, and he was talking about the suit he had to put on. You know, he had to put on this giant fat suit, and they were trying to train. And so that you remember the monkey, monkey that's down in the sewer. So a part of the circus. And anyway, so he was saying when he was shooting it. That when Batman sends the Penguin the card that says, you know, the children could not attend. Batman, the monkey's supposed to hand him the card. Well, when the monkey, you know, the monkey's trained to hand him the card, the monkey was coming right at DeVito, and instead of handing him the card, it just jumped and bit him right in the groin, right where the thing was, and tore out an enormous chunk of the suit. Like, tore the suit out, And so they had to shut down the production, and it took they had to remake another suit. And DeVito was saying that if he hadn't been wearing at least like a solid, a solid 2 feet of padding, he would be castrated because of that monkey's bite.
Man,
and he was horrified to have to do it again.
So, Edward Scissorhands is my favorite Tim Burton. I really, really love that movie. But I love my favorite
movie of all time.
Oh, I love that film so much. That is such a beautiful movie.
It is.
But so this, Tim Burton is just like he's so unique. But Batman and Catwoman, it's such a weird relationship. But I also think of all of like his love interests, she's probably the most perfectly suited for him, right?
Oh yeah, that without a doubt. Like that was something I was gonna want. I'm glad you brought that up because it seems, and especially Selina Kyle is a damaged human being, as we come to find out. Especially after the fall and the cat fiasco, but it would seem to me that they would be the perfect match. Like, obviously, going back to the first one with Vicki Vale and Kim, that was more of a fling. These two are almost, in a way, kindred spirits, brooding people who want to dress up and go out at night in black leather and vigilante justice or whatever.
Well, I've never really figured out why Batman and Catwoman even ever had to fight each other.
So I was going to ask that because like her objective is Max Schreck, right?
Yeah.
But like at some point she decides she also has to fight Batman. I don't know why, but she does.
Yeah, that never really gets answered. It's like, was Batman upset that she blew up, that she stuck all that stuff in the microwave and blew up Shrek's building? Did he feel like that there was some sort of need to stop her from stealing? I don't know, because, and especially in the Burton, the Burton universe, Batman has no problem killing people. Like he sticks a bomb to that one guy and drops him down a hole. Maybe the sweetest scene in the whole movie is when he at the beginning when the Batmobile pivots on it, pivots and shoots up that fireball and lights that dude on fire.
Yeah, so they try to frame him as a murderer, but he's definitely a murderer in this movie.
Oh yeah, he's with no remorse. Like he could care less.
Yeah. So also by the way, Michelle Pfeiffer is so good in this movie that I can't possibly picture someone else. So I think she's either 32 or 34. So she's pretty young, but. But man, she just inhabits this role really, really well. She does a great job.
Well, listen to this. So I was, again, when I was doing the research for this, it said that originally Annette Bening was cast to be Catwoman. Like she got the role. She was set. Annette Bening was gonna do it, and then she got pregnant.
Yeah.
So she couldn't do it. So she dropped out, and then
Tim Burton like handed a suitcase like full of like I don't know $5,000 to Warren Beatty, and he's like,
please
make it happen, yeah.
Please,
hey Warren,
fill her up. Yeah,
I need you to do it. Me and Saul, dude. Like this is we've put Annette in the leather suit, and it's just not doing it for me. So Warren, we'll give you some royalties, but then. It was saying that that Raquel Welch, Madonna, Ellen Barkin, Cher.
Can you imagine Cher?
Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon.
We're all in the running. Like they were all trying out and fighting for the role, and then Tim Burton apparently wasn't even familiar with Michelle Pfeiffer's work, which is crazy because she was in Scarface, They said that the second they didn't even screen test or anything in the first meeting. It was like boom, done. This is it, and they couldn't have picked a more perfect actor for the role.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to step on what you guys were saying, but I knew you would appreciate that. The images of Susan Sarandon donning the Catwoman suit is just that'll keep you up nights.
How about that Catwoman origin story, though?
Okay,
at
that's
least
my next
in the Tim Burton universe. Yeah, that.
Why cats? Like, okay, so Michelle Pfeiffer has a cat at her house, and so then she falls off of a building, and then all the cats in the city save her.
Do that? So that's does she happened. Die? Do they resurrect her with cat powers, or do they just like give her cat CPR?
It was like they were numb on her fingers, and then all of a sudden her eyes roll back in her head, and then snaps awake. It was almost like she'd been injected with like one of those. I don't know, what do you call that when somebody's about to die and they stick that needle, you know, in their leg or whatever, and boom, you pop back.
Like in the Marvel universe, there's like radiation and you're born a god, or there's like a radioactive spider or something. But in the Tim Burton DC universe, or I guess in the Batman universe, if you experience trauma, whatever animal is nearby at the time is now your identity for the rest of your life.
Yes. Bats, cats, fish.
Well, and like in like the normal like DC comics and whatnot, Catwoman is just like a cat burglar, which is kind of how, you know, how she gets her name and how she's spry and whatnot, and she's able to, you know, go in and out of buildings and just. But
I like to in the Nolan Hathaway Catwoman, they never call her Catwoman. She's called the Cat because she's a cat burglar, and she has her little goggles that she raises up, and it just the goggles just happen to make her look like a cat by the way she wears them. I thought that was kind of cool when they did that.
Having all those cats nipping at her, that was something else.
It was so Tim Burton-y, and I think that would have freaked me out as an actress, because I think they like spread a bunch of like cat food and peanut butter all over her, so they'd lick her. And I happen to know that cats don't care. They'll eat you if you give them a chance. So,
they especially those feral ones that are out in that were out there. And then it was again. And I just hear from what you're saying, you're a Tim Burton appreciator as much as I am. But for her to get attacked by the cats and then come back from this like prudish woman who is not like even the least bit confident in herself or her sexuality or anything like that, to then turn into this just like gymnast flipping around, using a whip, kicking Batman's ass. Like it was
the cats taught her how to backflip.
What we didn't see was the training montage.
She became Simone Biles.
So
a wild take from Burton.
Yeah.
I mean.
So Michelle had some serious shoes to fill, because I'm a big fan of the 1960s Batman. And so we have some great Catwomans with Julie Newmar and Lee Merriweather and maybe my favorite Eartha Kitt. But I think all things considered, Michelle Pfeiffer is probably the person that I will always remember as Catwoman. I think just knocks it out of the park.
Like, how many Batman movies have there been? I think it's not even close as far as the female leads in all other Batman movies.
Yeah, well,
it goes to Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer, what she does in this, and I was reading JR through your running dialogue when you watch this, and just talking about, and you talked about that when she's in Shrek's and the one take where it was just one take where she with the whip just whipped the heads off of those mannequins. I mean, that wasn't like a body double. That was Michelle Pfeiffer going in there and just putting on a tour de force.
Yeah, I had.
And she actually really did that.
Yeah, I had to YouTube it because I just assumed it was like there was a mechanism to make the heads fall off, but that's her. And then the perfect ending to that, after she whips the heads off, is she just turns it into a skip rope, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just what she did with that part. I can't imagine anyone else at that time being able to do that and look as good as she did doing it. And then also to have that, she also had that, like, she mastered that part of being, you know, in the beginning being so unsure of herself and stumbling around and all that, and then all turning into this, like, just smoke show.
So
I love the scene where she's pouring the coffee and she's trying so hard to stay out of the way, but in that effort, she's like completely in the way. And
oh, yeah.
Like, she just plays that part just really, really well. She's really great. So I want to talk real quick about the Penguin's plot at the end because it seems so poorly conceived. Like, so he has this plan to go kidnap all of the firstborn in Gotham City, which is, that's got to be like tens of thousands of children, right?
Okay, no, this is what I think. This is what I think. They don't make it clear, but I think he made a specific list of just the people in Gotham who would be at the party, so the rich people's firstborns.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That makes more sense, because he sends out like that tiny train, and I'm like, this isn't going to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he sends out the Penguins with all the missiles, which is enough to destroy, to kill 100,000 people. But then all the missiles get launched on Aquatic World. And I don't know.
If you want to just destroy something, may as well just have Penguins with missiles strapped to their back. Because the thing you're trying to destroy is the thing they're on anyway.
So but this movie...
You're on Gotham? Okay, destroy Gotham.
So Batman's gadgets in this movie remind me the most of the old Adam West, right? Like, somehow he had the Penguin turnaround mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I love that you had... you had the poodle lady who was, like, announcing everything, right? Like, over a loudspeaker, like, 10 feet away from the Penguin.
There's something large coming this way. Very large, very fast. And the Penguin's just sitting there. He's eating live, you know, just raw fish, just shoveling it home. Which he does throughout the movie, and but you go on with the plot, because there's so like his whole plan at the end, and then you've got Alfred just over there, you know, doing a remix in the Batcave.
that's right. Doesn't Batman scratch a CD at some point?
Yeah, he does scratch the CD to get to mess up the Penguin's mayoral speech.
That's right. Love the line you get from the Penguin at the end where it says, "I'll murder you momentarily." Right.
as all that goo is dripping down his face, and there's so many, and that was one thing that, I mean, I think that I absolutely adore Jack Nicholson's performance as the Joker in the first one, and I don't know that it's even comparable, like, with him and the Penguin. But the Penguin's, like, the quips he has, like the way he, like, quips back and just the comebacks he has, you know, like, where at the beginning when Shrek's down in the sewer with him and he starts spinning that, spinning the umbrella and Shrek is like, what is that supposed to do, hypnotize me? And he goes, no, just give you a massive headache. And then he fires it at him, and then he jumps. He goes, oh, you big baby, just blanks. I mean, he's just got stuff like that just coming. He just is nonstop with that.
So
kills me.
DeVito's great. And also, I read that he method acted this. So that means if you were in this movie, you had to occasionally bump into Danny DeVito method acting the Penguin on set.
Have you guys ever noticed that when people, quote, method act something, they never method act, like, a person who's fun to be around?
Oh, yeah.
It's always the worst person to be around that people, like, quote, method act on the set and not come out of character.
Yeah, it's just, they stink.
Could you imagine, like, breaking for, you know, to go to dinner, and it's like, hey, Danny, you want to come get some dinner with us? No, I'm Oswald.
And can you imagine him like at the craft services table and everyone's eating and he's just letting the black drool come out of his mouth? Anyway.
Here's all those grunt. Oh, man.
And asking the women if he can pin Cobblepot for mayor on their breasts or show off his French flipper trick.
The French flipper.
So, you guys said something about 45 minutes ago. That I've been thinking about kind of in silence for this whole time, about how this movie is darker than the first movie. After thinking about it, I do think the first movie is darker, in a sense, because the first movie was strangely almost in the real world, like kind of real world adjacent. Like it was like a real world where there were just two lunatics within the real world kind of fighting it out, you know, Batman and Joker. This movie is less in like the Batman world, and it's more in the Edward Scissorhands world. Like this movie feels like a fable or a fairy tale. Like, because there's so much stuff, and I love Batman Returns. I love it a lot. But, you know, like we were saying, you know, with, like, okay, why did Catwoman have to do this? Why did, like, there's a sequence, you know, at one point Penguin is writing his list of kids to kidnap, and then he goes downstairs and Christopher Walken says, by the way, you're running for mayor. And he's like, really? Okay, I guess. and, I mean, just stuff like that happens just constantly in this movie, and... like plot-wise and character-wise, I just if you don't like this movie, I get it. None of that stuff makes sense. But just tone-wise, I think things flow in sort of a magical world rather than a dark world. And so I think that's what Batman Returns is. And possibly, I mean, I don't know. Possibly the most Tim Burton movie, and probably the best Tim Burton movie in like the good Tim Burton, because I wouldn't consider myself a Tim Burton fan anymore, because kind of like Ridley Scott, you know, it's pretty top heavy. You know, the past 20 years have not been good to Tim Burton, but this early stuff, you know, when he was hitting his stride, it was really going with Batman Returns, I'd say.
So I have to go by the Bill Fillmore standard here, where as I think my father enjoyed Batman with Jack Nicholson, and he hated this movie.
Really?
Right. He thought this movie was so dark. He's like, did you notice that there's never any sunshine in the movie? Which isn't true, but yeah, pretty close. But like, my dad just thought that like this was the darkest thing he'd ever seen, and so poor Bill. It's fun. When it gets to this time of year, sometimes I'll post on Facebook the horror movies I'm watching, and my dad will just put a comment like, why would you want to watch that? So there we go. But anyway.
I just say, Bill, I'm glad we got a Bill reference in. Bill cracks me up. What a gentleman.
Yeah. He's a good guy. If you're not careful, you might get a Bishop's interview if you're over at the Fillmore house.
Oh, I've actually had a sit down with Bill a time or two, and he's stared deep into my soul. And he can see it all.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, he'll be happy to know he was on the podcast.
Yes.
All right. So, and also, my dad's been bugging me for a million years to watch his favorite movie of all time, which is A Man for All Seasons, and I finally did, and it was fine.
It was fine.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
All right. So, he promised me he would watch World of Apu, which he hasn't, but that's whatever, Bill. Okay.
Well, it's a good movie. I saw it. It's
Hey, is there anything else you guys want to talk about, or you want to get into awards?
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do on awards.
Yeah, I think we're ready for awards.
Let's get into the awards.
Okay. Yes.
All right, we're going to try and do lightning round here. We're going to go fast and furious. I'll start with, let's go, Tony. We're going to start with best title, Tony.
I'm going to go with Aliens. Just a clean S. As the sequel, I think it's clean, crisp, gets to the point. You know it's the sequel. You know it's the second one, and I think it's a perfect title.
So why didn't we get Batman's? Should have just been Batman's.
Batman.
All right,
Batman or Batmen in the house.
What do you got, Sean?
I went Batman Returns simply because when was the last time a mass audience didn't want to see Batman return in any form? Batman Returns, I'm in.
Yeah.
Take my money.
All right, John, what you got?
Okay, I agree with Tony. I'm going to go with Aliens. It not only is it just a really quick, simple title, but it actually kind of describes the plot, you know, contextually from the first movie. It doesn't just put a two on there. It's like, oh my gosh, there might be more than one of these aliens.
We'll get to that.
I don't think it's true, but there's a kind of a story, like a sort of an apocryphal story that when when James Cameron was pitching Aliens to the like the board at 20th Century Fox or whatever, he wrote on the whiteboard Alien, and then he wrote an S at the end, and then he drew dollar signs through the S. And that was his whole pitch.
That's funny.
What a flex.
Yeah. Alien, and then beat, and then S. Yeah. He gives it a nice little beat, and then writes, no, that's perfect.
So I picked Predator because I imagine Jesse the Body saying Predator. So, all right, best movie poster, John.
Okay, I went with Aliens because how much more black can
blue
the
and black
get?
Yeah,
and also like the eye kind of looks like this suggestive sort of sexual thing, which is what aliens are.
They're sexy.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with being sexy. All right, Sean, movie poster.
I went Predator with, I mean, an absolutely jacked Arnie holding a weapon that weighs easily as much as I do and a sniper scope aimed at him. Like, for me, like, you see that, like, I don't even need to know what the plot is, anything. That's, I'm in.
Yeah. So that was my pick, too. I love that movie poster. What do you got, Tony?
I did not want to go deep into the sexual nature of the aliens, so I did leave that out. Because I mean, it's pretty gruesome when you think about it. I won't mention anything more about it, but I went with the aliens as well. It's so clean. It's the blue and the black. I mean, I love it.
Yeah, it's a great poster. All right. So, coming back around, Tony, what's your favorite tagline from any of these films?
The Predator one. Yeah, what was
that? That's what I went with, too. Soon the hunt will begin.
That's what I chose.
Yeah, soon the hunt will begin. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, John, what do you got?
My tagline is, there are some places in the universe you don't go alone. That's Aliens.
Yeah. All right, so now we're doing alternate taglines. If you had been given the opportunity to write the tagline, what would you have chosen? And John, I'll just start with you, and you can do all three of yours.
Okay, I'll do all three of mine. Okay, tagline for Aliens. Okay, and this is in all caps. It's just plural. That's all it says, just plural in all caps.
Ooh.
Okay.
Now, the Predator tagline is, I can't read this, he ain't got time to bleed, but he do got time to kill. And then, but then the poster, it shows Jesse Ventura there, so you kind of get confused, you think it's about him, but he gets a hole blown through his chest, so then you're surprised when you watch the movie. Okay, then the tagline for Batman Returns is, hey, was the first movie not dark and weird enough for you? In this movie, a guy belches black fluid for no reason.
All right, Sean, what do you got?
All right, Aliens, just at the bottom in blue, the more the better.
Okay.
Predator, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't there.
Mm.
And Batman Returns, as I mentioned in the beginning, Gotham's got a new Santa.
Very good. What do you got, Tony?
For Aliens, this time, ... there's more.
Oh, man.
Okay. No.
All right.
for Batman, I just did Batman is back. And then for Predator, the hunt is on. Instead of, you know, the heat is on, we got the hunt is on, you know, so.
Very good. Okay, so for Aliens, I put, this time there's more than one Aliens. So pretty close to Tony. So, Predator, someday this movie will generate the most famous meme in the world. And Batman Returns, if you like black drool, you'll love Batman Returns.
Wow, you stole from all of us.
Yeah, okay. So, best titular line. And so I'm not sure if any of these movies, someone, except maybe Aliens?
Right. In Aliens, Hudson says, to Vasquez, hey, we thought you were an illegal alien, but then you signed up for the Marines or something like that. But I don't think they actually say aliens in Aliens. They say Hunter and Predator.
So yeah. I made one up then, and I hope you guys did as well. And mine is from Aliens, and it's Hudson saying, "Look at all these freaking aliens, man!" So I'm assuming that at some point.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, what do you got, Tony? Do you have a titular line?
So honestly, I was thinking back, and there weren't any. So I'm gonna go to. This kind of comes back to one of my quotes, and I won't say what the first person said, but what Selena Kyle says in reference to what Max Schreck said was, he is Batman, you moron.
Oh, I know why you're saving the other half, so yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see, Sean, do you have one?
Yeah, I just went with the same thing from Aliens. It was the exact same one that that John had.
Oh yeah, the alien Vasquez.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. That was your pick, John?
No. Actually, okay. Yeah, no, I did find one. There was one from Predator. It was kind of it was hard to hear, but it was a line from Hawkins. It was when he was talking to Billy again, right? Remember all the jokes he tells to Billy? So Hawkins says to Billy, he goes, "So Billy, I had this blind date with this girl named Shelley, and so like 10 minutes before the time of the date, this girl shows up." And she's like built, you know? And I'm like, all right, Shelly's early. And so then she starts making out with me. And I start moaning like, Shelly, oh, Shelly. And then she says, I'm not Shelly. I'm Veronica. And I say, what? Where's Shelly? And this girl says, she's not here yet. I'm the pre-dater.
Oh, John.
Ooh.
Oh, John.
Oh, wow.
Oh, John.
You guys remember that line?
That's going deep.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely remember that line. And he's like, get it? Predator? Because we're being hunted by the Predator?
Predator. Yes.
Okay. Very good. All right, John, what's your favorite opening credits?
My favorite opening credits, I'm going to have to go Batman Returns with Little Moses in the Blue Nile.
Yeah. What about you, Tony?
It's got to be that Batman Returns without Danny Elfman music.
Yes.
Yes.
Sean?
Batman.
Oh, we all agree.
Excellent credits, Batman. Okay, but we have to... honorable
mention
Danny
to the best. Elfman music.
Yeah, it's like, wonderful.
It's the Elfman music that just gets it every time.
Yeah.
It's fresh Elfman, too. It's fresh out of Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
Now... Roy, before you go on to the next category, we have to have we never mentioned best closing credits, but...
Yes!
Oh, no!
Are you going to bring it up later?
It's going to get brought up later, yeah.
No.
Okay.
It'll probably get brought up later, but I think we all know where we're going with this.
Yeah.
Well, I know where you're going.
I'll let you bring it up. I'll
bring it up later.
But it does need to get mentioned.
It's going
to
get mentioned. It's 100% going to get mentioned. Okay.
Well, and quickly talking about opening credits, I'd be remiss to not. I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but as Predator opens with all those guys getting out of the helicopter, I know we touched on it, but all those guys coming out like Mac wearing a full suit and the whole deal, that has to be an honorable mention.
That's pretty darn good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Technology. John, is it your turn or are we starting with Sean? Let's go Sean. Sean, your favorite, the best use of technology.
The best use of technology has got to be the Penguin using that thing to
arcade game.
To take over the Batmobile and then ride that thing in his van.
That's really great. That's such a great part of that film. Like
it
the
is.
Supermarket quarter ride, right? Yeah.
Little old lady, 12 o'clock high.
All right, Tony, what about you?
Okay, so I kind of want to say Batman's tech to make the CD skip.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
However, I'm just going to go with all of the Predator technology. I mean, some of that stuff is so awesome that he has.
Yeah.
I mean, the countdown on his wrist, him being able to go invisible.
The three-dot sight. You know,
The plasma cannon.
The the buttons on his suit that work well with, like, extended Lee press-on nails that he has. It's like delicately pushing all the buttons like a, you know, like a busy secretary with long nails.
I mean, he's got a little health kit.
Yeah.
And I mean, in some of the other Predator movies, you should see all the stuff they have.
Yeah,
it's insanity, but
he's decked
Predator
out.
Technology, without a doubt.
All right, John, what's your favorite technology?
Honorable mention to the Batmobile Lazy Susan turnarounder thing.
Oh, yeah.
It plants into the ground and spins the whole car around. And then, but the winner, or the stately Wayne Manor, the several reflective bat signals.
Oh, yeah.
That cue right into Bruce Wayne's window. You got to wonder when he has guests over, like, hey, what's that? What's that bat signal? Oh, yeah, that just shines in right into my room when the bat signal goes off. And they're like, oh, why is that? Why is that Bruce Wayne? Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going with duct tape because, wow. I mean, that turned one weapon into three weapons.
Yes.
You cannot argue that.
All right. No, that's good. John, what's the best name for many of these characters?
Corporal Spunkmeyer.
Well, I was going to say it rhymes with name, but Corporal Spunkmeyer, okay. All right, Tony, your favorite name.
So I think it can go with any of those names from Predator. Just those nicknames they give: Dutch, Blaine, Poncho, Mac, Billy. I mean, is Billy William, or are they just going with Billy? Like, I mean, just any of those nicknames are just perfect and spot on.
Yeah. All right, Sean, what do you think?
That was kind of a cop-out answer, but...
You're good.
Oh, I without a doubt had to go Oswald Cobblepot.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, how did Bob Kane come up with that one? Oswald Cobblepot.
That's really good. So I've noticed that when wrestlers are in movies, they pick awful names. Hulk Hogan is Shep in Suburban Commando, and now we have Jesse the Body as Blaine. So I picked Blaine. All right. John, did you say yours? You did, right?
Yeah, Spunkmeyer.
Yeah, okay.
Spunkmeyer,
so,
yeah.
Sean, then, your favorite food?
Raw fish.
Oh, man.
Raw fish eaten by the penguin.
Yeah, I think it was a trout.
So yeah, it looked like a trout. So by the way, the trivia conflicted. One of the trivia said that's a real fish, and another piece of trivia said fake fish. So I don't know which is true.
I bet it was fake.
Yeah. It had to be.
You did say he went method.
Yeah,
he's like full method. That's got to be a real fish.
It's pretty convincing, man. And I love that, like, he's eating it as he's coming down to meet the crowd, and then it's revealed that he's there in front of like 100 people, but he just keeps going at it.
Yes.
And there's women falling all over themselves to get towards him.
Yeah, that was the best. He's like eating the fish. He's like, by the way, you're running for mayor. Here's your entire team. It's a room full of people. He bites a guy's nose off.
Yeah.
And then they just go about business as usual after that.
All right, so let's see. Tony, your favorite food?
I kind of want to try that cornbread that had everybody in it. Yes.
Liquid cornbread.
That had everybody in a tizzy over in Aliens.
Yeah.
Is that what you picked, John?
Yeah, liquid cornbread.
So I just went with milk.
Milk from Bishop?
Yeah, milk. The milk that leaked out of Bishop's bisected body. Yep.
Too bad we didn't. Yeah. Oh wait, no. It's his name's not Mother in Alien, no, is it? Yeah.
I don't think so. When he gets torn in half, I just think of how thirsty I am and how much I need a bowl of cereal. So, all right. Let's see, John, your favorite outfit.
The Catwoman outfit is the winner, but we have to acknowledge Bill Duke's helicopter suit. I don't know what he was doing right before he got on a helicopter to go into a combat zone, but he was wearing a suit.
Very and good.
So kick-ass.
Yeah.
All right, Tony, what do you got?
Okay, so obviously we know Catwoman wins. I will mention that I do believe that the Tim Burton Batman outfit, I think, is the best.
Yeah.
But the one thing that needs to be mentioned are those Reebok kicks that Ripley is wearing.
Oh.
When she, those, they're called the Bug Stompers, and they're the, they're major high tops, and they are awesome. And they actually got released by Reebok probably like 3 or 4 years ago. And now, like, in order to get a pair, they're thousands of dollars.
Wow, that's a good one. All right, Sean, what do you got?
Yeah, I went Catwoman. I think it's unassailable.
So I picked Catwoman, but in the final scene, I love that, like, her outfit is just is progressively falling apart. And in the final scene, like, she has tufts of hair sticking out, and the seams are coming apart.
Yeah.
I love that touch. Okay, your favorite special effects. I'm just going to go first because it's bisected Bishop with his intestine tubes flailing around, leaking curdled milk everywhere.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I just went Stan Winston just with the just creating the aliens itself. I mean, I went as broad as that. Just the aliens themselves as the effects that just create those and make them look real is just blew my mind.
That's really good. How about you, Tony?
It kind of looks a little campy, but I'm going to still go with the invisibility from the Predator.
You know, for when that movie was made, that was one heck of an effect.
Yeah.
It was. And while it looks super weird with somebody when like the Predator's running,
yeah,
before you actually meet the Predator and he's 7'2", imagine that thing invisible running at you. Like that is just that's horrific in and of itself right there. So,
all right, John, what do you got?
I picked Predator Invisibility, too, but since that was already picked, I'm going to go with the Predator Glowing Blood, which was just the glow sticks with KY Jelly.
That's true. So we skipped Best Alien, which is our most racist award, but it actually fits really well. Fits really well. So, John, who's your favorite alien?
I'm specifically going to go with the face huggers.
Okay, very good.
Like the subset of the aliens where it's like, okay, this is the first stage. They're the face huggers, and then they plant eggs and then they die, I guess. They're weird. Yeah. And they have the tail and the arms and the fingers. It's weird.
All right, Tony, what about you?
This is so hard because I would be remiss not to choose the Predator. However, the original Xenomorph alien is just amazing, and it's just perfect in the way it's constructed. It's so creepy. It's so eerie. I'm just a huge fan. I have to go with the alien Xenomorph.
Very good. What about you, Sean?
I went with the Queen.
So I also picked the Queen. It's just so imposing, yeah. Right?
Yeah. How you get? Yeah, 15 feet tall, mix of like a spider with a scorpion laying eggs. I mean, good grief.
All right, your favorite location, Sean. Where would you love to be?
It's got to be out. I mean, you could make a case for all three, truly, in a way, but I went outer space.
Okay.
I mean, how can you beat outer space, especially when the humans had inhabited that new planet and, you know, created, like, this livable atmosphere, you know, and then they're driving around in those, like, trucks that look like Teslas now that Elon Musk clearly ripped off.
The Tesla tank, yeah.
Yeah, Tesla tanks that I think Elon Musk completely ripped James Cameron off. So I went space.
Okay. How about you, Tony?
So maybe didn't understand the question necessarily, like the best location that like you would want to be. I feel like the best location, the best place where it was filmed has to be that aliens hive. Just that hive where they go into. I felt like that's just insane, and it was so cool to see like live, like coming from the original Alien movie and then getting that hive, like that was the best filming location in my opinion.
For only $15 million. So anyway, you can this category can be broadly interpreted. I think I've kind of taken it as if I was going on a vacation, but I think you can interpret it any way you want. And so, John, what is your best location?
I went with downtown Gotham. Hopefully not during a press conference.
Not during a press conference.
Just like a non-press conference downtown Gotham, because there are those statues that are kind of cool. You can take pictures of those.
Yeah, so I went...
The Tim Burton Gotham City, I love that, like, the whole aesthetic that he did, that his creation, I just love that.
Yeah, I mean, Gotham City during Christmas, that's my pick, too. Like, again, you got to avoid press conferences, but it seems pretty sweet. Also, like, if you see a circus tent, you should probably beat your feet, right? It's time to leave.
Or if somebody comes in with saying that they're a talent scout.
All right. So the next one is favorite song, and I'm just going first because the most criminally underrated band of the 80s is Susie and the Banshees, and this happens to be my favorite Susie and the Banshees songs, and I just love it. I there's a line that says, "Commit your crime in your deadly time. It's too divine. I want to bend. I want this bliss, but something says I must resist." Oh my goodness, this is such an immense song, and it is always on my top 100 favorite songs of all time.
Well, it should be pointed out, the reason it's the best Susie and the Banshees song is because it's a Susie and the Banshees Oingo Boingo co-production, because Danny Elfman is also credited with this song.
Well, so, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, I hopefully not stealing too much thunder, but John, are you next? You're next. We're calling you.
Yeah, it's face-to-face. It's face-to-face. You said it, so...
I'm going next, and it's Long Tall Sally.
Oh, very good. Very good.
The 18-minute version playing in the chopper?
I could listen to it for 18 minutes, but Long Tall Sally from Little Richard, that scene in the helicopter, woo!
Yeah, real. That's good. What do
Just
you?
Just wonderful.
What do you got, Sean?
Yeah, I love the... I'm a huge Elfman fan and love the... the Oingo Boingo and that whole thing. But I also went with Long Tall Sally by Little Richard, only because that same thing Tony and I have just had so over the years of just, you know, the inside jokes of gonna have me some fun and just the whole thing. So I went Long Tall Sally.
Very good. All right, Sean, your favorite guest star, which is also a weird category to be interpreted any way you want.
He may have been in it, but I mean, I had to go Ventura.
Yeah, it's Jesse the Body.
The Body. I mean, he's not even in it for. I mean, how long is? I mean, he's not in the movie for that long in terms of the impact he has. That line, "I ain't got time to bleed."
Yeah.
Holy shit! That just every yeah. So I had to go Ventura. Had to be
very good. What about you, Tony?
I'm gonna go with Shane Black.
Ah,
coming off of that Lethal Weapon and Lethal Weapon 2. Actually, I don't know when was Lethal Weapon 2 released.
Lethal Weapon is 87, right?
Yeah.
So it would have been the same year as this.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yes. And having read his script for Lethal Weapon 2, just them bringing him on to punch up the script and then having him be in the movie, it's hilarious to me. So.
Yeah, that's a good use of guest. That's perfect, yeah.
All right, John, what do you got?
I went with, you know who I just love seeing pop up?
Jan Hooks.
Jan Hooks.
Yeah, my favorite female from Saturday Night Live in the 80s, for sure. I love Jan Hooks. She's no longer with us. I'm very sad about that, but she was so good on Saturday Night Live, and I feel like she should have been in so many movies.
Yeah, she's great. So I had Jesse the Body Ventura as well. So coming back around, John, the best Odyssey reference in this film.
Oh, boy. Okay, so in this movie, Ripley, let's see, she goes home. Well, she goes to the other ship, you know, that she wakes up from, you know? And that's like her going to Troy. She goes to this other ship. But then she goes back to the alien planet, LV whatever, which is her home from Troy.
LV 426.
Yeah.
So that's her real home, and she makes it back there.
Okay.
And she kills a bunch of suitors.
Okay. All right, Tony, what do you have for Odyssey reference?
I'm going to be honest. I have this blank. I wasn't totally familiar with the whole Odyssey reference thing, so...
We're not either.
This category, this award might not last very long, but we're using it to make fun of ourselves. But
yeah.
Okay, Sean, do you have anything?
Yeah, I had the same one as John did, actually.
Okay.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
So mine's cheating a little bit because it's more of an Iliad reference, but I'm calling Heat Vision the Predator's Achilles heel.
Hey.
Yeah. All right, external recurring character, Sean. Someone from one of these movies that has been in a movie we've already podcasted.
I went Michael Keaton.
Ah, very good.
Batman. Michael Keaton to me is Batman and always will be. I know that that is a hot topic debate, but Michael Keaton is Batman, and I just love what he did with the character, and so I went Keaton.
Yeah, I don't understand why there's even a debate. The Christopher Nolan movies were fine, and I liked them, and the Dark Knight was an incredible film. But Michael Keaton is the Batman.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Tony. Let's see. I think Tony, go ahead. External recurring character.
Hot take: The Dark Knight Rises is the best of the trilogy. Anyway, I'm gonna go with. Because I actually love this movie as well, I'm going to go with Michelle Pfeiffer from Lady Hawk.
Ooh. Oh. Wow. Ah. Well chosen, sir.
Very well chosen. I think that beats mine, actually.
What do you got? What do you have, John?
I have Michael Biehn from The Terminator. No, previous Cameron movie, you know, where he's like, oh, he's also the soldier trying to protect the woman. Yeah. But also he fails at the end.
So I'm going to honorable mention Doug Jones, who is in a whole lot of Star Trek, and that's our other project.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
Okay.
But Danny DeVito, because he was in Terms of Endearment, where he was the really weird, short Texan cowboy.
Oh, wow.
Terms of Endearment is awesome.
It was a movie. Yeah. That was okay.
Okay. Yep. All right, John, your favorite death.
Death. Okay, honorable mention to the alien queen's ovipositor. Ovipositor? Katie told me that word. It's like an actual word that hooks onto, like, insects, you know, that they lay eggs with. Yeah.
A oscilloscope.
But no, it's Dylan. Carl Weathers.
Oh, man, when he loses his arm.
And then he attempts to, like, fire with his other arm. And then, yeah, gets it.
Very good. Okay, Tony, what about you? Best death.
So, obviously, the Carl Weathers was my choice as well. I'm going to go with Hudson for Bill Paxton's death in Aliens. Just because of the way he went out. He went out yelling, telling the aliens to get this and get that. And then he gets sucked under the floorboards and goes out. Goes out in all of the glory with his language, and and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And then the aliens threw him back. They're like, this guy talks too much. They're like, we almost got rid of that guy.
I think the aliens probably strung him up on a wall, and he was waiting for Ripley to come save him, and she never came.
She walked past Hudson to get to Newt.
Yeah. She ignored him while he was saying, "It's game over. I think it's game over." All right.
It's game over, man.
All right, Sean, what's the best death?
Okay, this was a tough one, and this was a tough one. I think that it's got to be Billy for me when getting his spinal column ripped out with his skull attached on the tree.
Yeah.
But perhaps the most satisfying was Max Schreck getting turned into a withered grape by Catwoman at the end.
So I don't know if that's okay. Is that an intentional callback to when the Joker joy buzzes that guy? But that's my pick too. Max Schreck getting the taser kiss, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a callback to that guy in the Quiet Earth who was sitting at the controls that he found.
Yeah, I'm gonna go change it. Yeah, not change it, but yeah, Schreck is mine because we touched on Billy. Schreck, I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Very good.
You guys have mentioned about Billy getting his spinal cord ripped out. So the Predator on all of their kills, they collect trophies, and so they collect the skulls of the different creatures. So in Predator 2, there's a scene on the Predator spaceship, and they have like a Tyrannosaurus Rex skull.
Oh wow!
There's actually an alien, like a xenomorph alien skull, which is what kind of started the debate of, are the aliens in the same universe as the Predator, and that spawned like the Alien versus Predator universe from that.
So did Predator 2 miss an opportunity to simply call their movie Predators?
Predator. Absolutely.
Yeah. They, without a doubt, they did.
Okay. They made up for it later with that movie called Predators.
Yeah. All right, Sean, who's your favorite villain?
Without a doubt, it's Dylan. What Carl Weathers? What a jackass! He Dutch and the gang to come out thinking they're gonna wipe out some easy, JV army squad, yet he's led them into this death trap, skinned the other guys alive, and then, for me, it's Dylan. He's just, it pretends to be Dutch's friend and just stabs him right in the back.
Very good. All right, Tony, what do you think?
Max Schreck, even more so than the Penguin.
Oh, man. So
he's
Penguin
like chess playing all the villains.
Yeah, so the Penguin, yes, right? Like you can maybe have sympathy for the Penguin, but Max Schreck's just an awful person, and you gotta love it when, like he says, if she tries to blackmail me, I'll drop her out a higher window, right? He's just a
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, I was thinking about going with Burke, but Burke is just a putz. So I mean, he's not even a villain.
So remind me who Burke is.
That's my two dads.
Oh, doggone it. That was my villain. It's my two dads.
Oh, shoot. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'll be okay. I'm fine.
It's okay. It's my villain, too. it doesn't matter.
I completely ripped on it as well, but...
It's fine.
Well, the thing is, no, but you're right. That's why I picked him as a villain, because, like Dylan, I actually do have... I kind of feel sorry for Dylan a little bit, because he's like... he's like trying not to make any noise, not give away their cover, and not do all this. And then he tried to be a man by, using his one good arm. And so you kind of feel a little bit for Dylan. But Burke is the same guy doing the same thing, and he's just a sniveling, snot-nosed, just like corporate leecho
And he locks you in a room with facehuggers.
Yeah, he does that thing. That's the most villainous thing I think of all three of these movies is that Burke decides to impregnate two women with alien embryos to meet the corporate bottom line or whatever. that's
ridiculous. And then he was going to sabotage the other pods so that the other members were going to die anyway. So rethinking on that, Burke is a great villain, even though he is a putz.
Oh, thank you.
He's a putz. He's a putz because he's a villain.
Yeah. So, yes.
Okay, but my hot take villain, though, just a real quick other one, is Ripley. Ripley is the villain of Aliens.
Whoa.
Because she had a pact. We had a pact. She had a pact with the alien queens. Like, okay, let me out of here. You know, you could tell. It's a woman thing. You could tell. It's like, okay, you let me out of here. I'm not going to kill your babies. But then once she gets out, again, like Castor Troy, she kills all the hostages on her way out. That's a bad thing. That's bad. Bad.
So Ripley is not John's hero then. So who's your hero?
My hero is, okay, sorry, two honorable mentions. First of all, the metal box that hit Gorman in the head. not just because, you know, I don't like Gorman because he's a bad guy, but somehow it knocked the douche out of him. Because he was, like, way cool after he got that concussion from that metal box, right?
Yeah.
He was really great for the rest of the movie. And then other honorable mention, Bishop, he's just awesome because, like, Ripley hates robots. She hates them bad. She hates him so bad, and she's like, "You didn't tell me there was going to be a robot on this ship." And he's like, "Oh, well, that was an uncool robot. I'm a cool guy. I'm a cool robot." And every single thing Bishop does is awesome. He volunteers to crawl through the shuttle thing. It's like James Cameron. He did this. Okay, it's crazy. He did this with Terminator 2 as well, where it's like, okay, you set up the first movie. The robot is the bad guy. You know, like Ian Holm in the first movie, he's like trying to set things up. He's programmed for evil. And then she's like, "Oh, you know, you're this robot." And he's like, no, I'm a good guy." And he lives up to it for the rest of the movie. And then in Terminator 2, same kind of thing. It's like, you know, you got Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first movie. He's trying to kill Sarah Connor. And then the next movie, she has to learn to trust. So it's like James Cameron has this interesting relationship with technology. It's like, okay, we got to fear what technology can like make us become and what it can do to us, but also we have to ask it for help when we need the help. Okay, but my actual hero is Billy, the tracker who sacrifices himself by cutting himself with the knife, and he is, okay, you know what? It's appropriation, it's a stereotype to have like this Native American be the tracker.
He's the tracker.
But you know what? It's so, okay, it's like not politically correct, but it's kind of so awesome that they have this Native American tracker on the team that, you know, like because he's Native American, he could do these weird superpowers with nature, and like he can walk somewhere and he can know exactly what happened and he can smell stuff and he senses the spirits in the air. Like that's kind of this weird stereotypical, like, you know, ancient Indian kind of weird thing, but also it's so cool, and I have to just say it's cool.
Also, you know, bravo for not killing any of your castmates during filming.
Yeah, he's a hero for not destroying the cast.
All right, Sean, or Tony, who's your hero?
Hicks from Aliens.
Okay.
And I guess he forms a bond with, like, Ripley. Like, is there sexual tension there? Like, I don't know for certain, but he seems to be willing to risk anything for her
in order to get a peek at her underwear.
He's willing to risk anything for a peek, so you know, I mean, he's first in there to jump
he jumps
through the window. He makes sure that Bishop's still, you know, that they're not going to go anywhere, and, you know, risking his whole life so that she can go save Newt. I mean, without Hicks there, I don't know if Ripley can pull that off, you know, because I'm sure as hell Bishop's going to get out of there. So.
Very good.
I'm going Hicks.
All right, Sean, what do you got?
All right. I went a little off book, too. I went with Catwoman. Oh. And with her, I mean, you could make the case at the end that she saves Batman, you know, because Max Schreck's got the gun, and he takes she's standing there, he takes that wild shot at him, and then she takes, what does she take? How many shots?
Like, it's four bullets.
Four. Yeah,
four bullets.
I love at the end of the movie, she looks up at the bat symbol. She's just hanging out in the alley with four bullets in her.
Yes. See, that was like the whole thing is it was like, then she takes out Shrek, who could be arguably the worst guy in the three films. He's easily in the top two. And then she goes, and then she's the one who survives. You know, the movie ends with her, you know, looking up at the bat signal, and she also saves that woman from being raped in the alley when she does the tic tac toe on that guy's face
because she's seemingly jealous of the girl getting raped.
Is that how you read that, John?
That's how I read that. Yeah.
Okay.
So I went Catwoman just for the fact that she, you know, and you never really, there were, you know, things that she, just the choices she made, and you could argue that the reasons why she was making them were for, you know, fighting for people who couldn't fight for themselves in the same way Batman does in some ways. So I went Catwoman.
Very good. So I also chose Catwoman.
Nice.
Yeah, she's the hero.
Nice.
All right, best movie goof, and I'm going to go first because it makes me so mad, because Tim Burton usually like takes such care, and this feels like a Joel Schumacher error, but when the cats are licking Catwoman and it's snowing and there's snow on the ground, one of the cats moves the sheet of cotton snow.
It's magical snow. Damn it.
Yeah. So my kids love Santa Claus, and we watch it every Christmas, but when Santa Claus slips off the roof and he, like, you know, he pulls up all the cotton snow on the roof, it's like that. Anyway, all right. I'm fine. Who's up? Sean, your best movie goof.
Okay. I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, and it could, I guess it was a little open for interpretation, but like arming the penguins with the missiles, I know we touched on this, but they had enough firepower to wipe out all of Gotham, yet they turn around and then like we said, but then it just blows up the zoo. Like, I still, as much as I love that movie, that's the one thing where I'm just like, that was the master plan, was to arm the penguins to go downtown and blow it up. Like, it just, to me, no.
All right, Tony, what you got?
I obviously love when Arnold covers himself in mud on accident and realizes that is what is able to camouflage him. However, when he sticks his head in the mud, he only covers half of his face. And then he's crawling, and then it comes back to him, and his full face is covered, and I just felt like they could have done a completely better job of the full coverage in mud.
Mm.
So,
very fair. What do you think, John?
Okay, in Aliens, when Ripley is working like on the space docks or whatever, the camera pans over, and the matte painting that shows the back of the space docks, it hesitates while the camera's panning. So the matte painting pauses for like two frames and then catches up to the pan of the camera. And so you could tell it's a matte painting.
Very good. So now we're at funniest moment. And like, these movies had some really nuts stuff, but was there anything more nuts in these movies than the 80s sitcom style end credits of Predator?
That's where it comes up. Okay, thank
That's
you.
That's where we're putting it in.
I've been waiting an hour for you to say that.
That was just insane, right? It's like the zoom in and give a smile to the audience ending credits.
Yeah. Standing
at the same time. It's,
yeah.
At the same time, it's completely awesome.
Yeah.
So I have this frame that has like little 3x5 pictures. I actually took 3x5 like screenshots of the end credits of Predator, and I've got them in a frame, and it's not on my wall currently, but I do have a picture of all the characters from Predator from the end credits.
You need to take a picture of it and put it on the Facebook page, Tony.
That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll find where it is. It might be over at the shed, Sean. But I'll find out where it is, and I will take a picture of it and send it out.
Oh, nice. Awesome. So since John and I are benevolent dictators, no one can actually post on the page. But if you want to send it to us, we will then post it and give due credit, because that'd be awesome.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we got to do that.
I love how Carl Weathers, like, doesn't he, like, catch a gun and then turns the camera and catches the gun? it's like, you know, when they, like, on Monday Night Football or whatever, and it's like, let's look at the offensive, you know, and it shows, like, the quarterback, you know, or the receiver, the tight end, like, catches a football and then looks at the camera, you know.
The smile.
Yeah.
All right, John, what's the funniest moment in these films?
Okay, it's when Selina Kyle, like, takes off from Bruce Wayne's house, and she says to... says to Alfred, hey, could you just make up a sonnet or maybe a dirty limerick or something? She asks Alfred to make up a dirty limerick to express how she feels about Bruce Wayne, which is awesome.
So she says that, and then I have to imagine that he followed through. And that at some point, like, he's just saying this dirty limerick to Bruce Wayne. All right. Tony, what do you think? Funniest moment?
Everything that Blaine does is funny. The entire character of Blaine is funny. Think of everything that he says. Calling somebody a slack-jawed, the F-slur. I obviously don't want to say it here, but just calling somebody that. And then, you know, calling himself a sexual tyrannosaur. And then just everything that he does is funny. I know this is kind of stepping on quotes, but we won't have time for all of them. But, you know, that son of a bee is dug in there like an Alabama tick. You know, just every line out of his mouth is a joke, and it's not necessarily meant to be a joke, yet everything he says is funny. So I'm just putting everything from Blaine.
Very good. So I've always wondered if Jesse the Body Ventura's chin got in a fight with Kirk Douglas's chin. I don't know which chin wins, but he has an incredible chin. All right, Sean, funniest moment.
Oh, when Arnold comes through and throws that knife right into that guy and says, stick around.
or when he knocks down the door and says knock knock.
Yeah.
So that reminds me, like,
those Arnold,
they're raiding that camp, like explosions, gunfire everywhere, and then they knock down that door and those two guys are just like planning something at the table, right?
Yeah.
Like they're finishing their lunch. I don't know.
Playing bridge.
Yeah, playing bridge.
We're on our break.
Okay. All right. John, you did your funniest, right?
Yes.
Okay. The best WTF or what the heck moment, Sean.
Okay, that had to be when the penguin bites that guy's nose.
That's so good.
Like, what were they thinking? Where did it come? And then, of course, everybody's fine, you know. Yeah. Back to work. Let's make a mayor. Blood still dripping down his chin, and then again with the sexual references or sexual more than innuendo from the penguin, that just kills me.
Yeah, very good. Okay, Tony, what do you got?
I'm gonna go with that entire scene with the penguin and Catwoman upstairs when Catwoman's laying on the bed. And the penguin comes up, and they're just talking, and, like, Tim Burton's, like, trying to, like, make, like, this weird, like, sexual tension between the two of them. Michelle Pfeiffer's, like, fake, like, licking herself like she's a cat. And it's just, and then she ends up putting the bird in her mouth, and it's just, you know, there's some sexual comments there, and it's just it's a what the hell kind of moment. Like, just that whole scene is just it's off kilter a bit.
It's weird, yeah.
Yeah.
So can you I don't want to get too deep into this, but can you even imagine, like, where would you even begin to try to have sex with the penguin? I don't even know, like, like how physically that unfolds. But anyway, lots of folds, I bet. So
yeah, folds.
Okay. All right, John, what's your what the heck moment?
Also related to penguin. It's that apparently penguin is just filled with, like, black cess fluid. just for no reason. I'm guessing if Batman just waited, I don't know, maybe like 12 more hours, Penguin would have succumbed to his black inner cancer that was just eating away his insides. Because what was that?
I have no idea. He has a separate gland that just leaks black fluid.
It's like his squid ink pouch. Yeah.
Okay, so I have an honorable mention for when the aliens are on the wall and you don't see them until they start moving. That was pretty great. But then I went with Billy's knife fight with the Predator, because, like, as soon as he, like, took out the knife and cut his chest, I thought, this isn't going to go well for Billy. And it didn't go well for Billy.
I thought he wasn't fighting Predator. I thought
was he just sacrificing himself
to, okay, like, yeah.
Well, there you go. All right, John, your favorite quote, and I've got a bunch of honorable mentions, but I think some of them are going to get taken. But go ahead, John.
First honorable mention, really quick, is when Bruce Wayne meets Selina Kyle for the first time. He says, "We've met. Oh, I'm sorry, I mistook me for someone else," which I thought was a good Batman line. But the line that's been going through my head all week is when Burke says something like, "Well, we can't really nuke this place from space because it's actually like a $22 trillion facility." And then Ripley says, "Well, they can bill me." That's my favorite line.
Uh-huh. Very good. What do you got, Tony?
Okay, I'm just going to do a couple of honorable mentions from Batman.
Yeah.
So Max Schreck says, "Bruce Wayne, what are you doing dressed up as Batman?"
That's so good. Yeah.
That's just hilarious to me. And then the Penguin also says, "You've got to admit, I've played this stinking city like a harp from hell." That's just great. Obviously, there is everything from Predator. I mean, you've got, "I ain't got time to bleed." You know, I don't want to go through, like, all of these and, like, take some from somebody else, but Sigourney's delivery of that line of what she says to the Queen, am I allowed to say it on the podcast?
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead. We might bleep it out, possibly, but go ahead.
Well, just when she says, like, "Get away from her, you..." You know, and, like, just perfect delivery from Sigourney. Like, mm-hmm. How many takes do you think that took from her? I mean,
one.
It's just perfect delivery from her. It's great. I mean, we got Dylan, "You son of a bee." Like, just awesome.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
All right, Sean, do you have a favorite quote?
Oh, yeah, hands down, "I ain't got time to bleed." That kills me. It epitomizes his character. I mean, Ventura probably didn't even read the script, but, I mean, if he got the script and you were a character and it was like, "Your character believes this, like, I ain't got time to bleed."
Yeah.
Like, you can go anywhere with that. So, "I ain't got time to bleed" is mine.
Very good. I can't believe no one said, "I'll bleed you real quiet and leave you here."
That's good.
So,
yeah.
So another honorable mention I have is, I was their number one son and they treated me like number two. But I decided to go with, "Our research tells us that voters like fingers." I thought that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, when you try to put the glove on him.
Okay, my favorite scene is when Selina Kyle returns to her apartment after being turned into Catwoman, and she just trashes her apartment. I think that scene is just outstanding.
Hell here,
yeah.
Yeah. John, all right, you're up.
Okay, my favorite scene, honorable mention to when they go in Aliens, when they go to the place where the people's chips are, and they're like, "Oh, we'll just find all the people huddled together here," and they find the chips, and then all the aliens turn, like, they come out of the walls. They are the walls. The aliens are the walls around them.
Yeah.
But the winner, it's got to be when Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne are at the masquerade party, and they're the only ones not dressed up, but they're dressed as their civilian, you know, people, as if they were dressed up, like as if their real characters are Catwoman and Batman. And they dance with each other, and Selina Kyle gives him the speech about how actually killing Max Schreck will solve things, and they say a few things where they realize, okay, you're Batman, I'm Catwoman, oh my gosh, what do we do now?
I think the line is, does this mean we have to start fighting?
Yeah.
All right, Tony, your favorite scene.
Okay, I have to name a few.
Okay.
That the tracker sound from Aliens is iconic. Just that sound is so unsettling. Like, when you hear, like, the tracking sound. So when the aliens are coming in through the sealed door, and they're like, oh, 8 meters out. It can't be 8 meters out. That they would be inside the door. You know, and just like that whole scene there, I mean, that's an honorable mention. When Newt falls into the water and that alien comes up from behind her, that's probably my favorite visual in all of the, like, the Alien franchise. But I would say my favorite scene is the first time seeing the Predator as he emerges from the water.
Oh, yeah.
And he comes up out of the water, and his camouflage is coming off, and it's all, you know, it's got the electricity. Arnold sees him for the first time, and you actually get the first glimpse of the Predator for the first time, and there's only, like, 30 minutes left in the movie. I mean, they set that up perfectly, and it's just, it's awesome. And then it leads up for the final, you know, half hour of the movie, which is just absolutely iconic.
Awesome.
Yeah, I went the Predator reveal, but when he takes his mask off.
Oh, yeah.
So when him and Arnold are going face to face, and he finally takes his mask off, drops it, and then you see that, you know, and then he kind of crouches and yells at, that's unbelievable. That's the first time I saw that. That just blew my mind.
Awesome. All right, best actor, folks. Sean, who's the best actor?
For me, it's DeVito.
Ah.
The complete transformation. I mean, it's unquestionably his greatest role, and the one he was born to play. They said that Sam Hamm, who wrote the screenplay, they wrote the Penguin for DeVito, and I just thought what he did with it. No one else could have played it. Everyone, he's the first thing you think of when you think about Batman Returns, just the whole thing. So I went DeVito.
I'm going to go with Schwarzenegger. I think it's his best performance of his entire career. I think it's the best movie he's been in, and it's definitely my favorite Schwarzenegger movie, and I couldn't imagine anybody else playing that role, and except for maybe Adrian Brody, but aside from that, it's Schwarzenegger all day for me.
Very good. John, what do you think?
Okay, you know what? I really appreciated DeVito in Batman Returns. Like, he was a lot better than I remembered. I'm like, you know what? You know, after Nicholson, you know, I don't know if he was, like, compared very favorably, but I think DeVito deserves kudos. But the answer is Pfeiffer. And if there were a character, like, in a new movie coming out, where, you know, it was this woman who's just like, oh, man, I can't get a date. Oh, I wish I were married. Oh, I need a man kind of thing. I would just write off the character. But Michelle Pfeiffer is so good that I'm like, you know what? You can be that character. It's not like, because you can act it. You can act it, and I can believe you, and I actually feel for you, even though this isn't the kind of character I would normally appreciate. But I appreciated her character more than anybody else.
Good. So I...
I had Michelle Pfeiffer written down, but I switched it to Danny DeVito. I think they both do an incredible job. But I guess I'm Team DeVito.
Nope.
No, I am.
I just love all the love that Batman Returns is getting, because there are so many scenes, even with best scene, I could go through the whole thing with Batman Returns, so this is just heaven for me.
Awesome. Okay. Unanswered questions. Everyone gets to answer a question that they felt went unanswered. So, John, go ahead.
Okay, I had a lot written down, but we talked about most of them, so I'll just ask this one question. Who built the Batmobile?
So don't they sort of address that in Batman Forever? Like, there's a bunch of, like, dwarves that their whole job is to build the Batmobile?
Like Ugnaughts?
I guess so. I think so. It's Ugnaughts.
Oh. Really? Okay, Ugnaughts built the Batmobile. Okay. That's fine.
Okay, Tony, what about you? Unanswered question.
I have two. One of them, probably several people are going to have, and then one of them is kind of a hot take, but... The first one, how did the alien queen make it into the plane unnoticed? I mean, that's probably on everybody's mind.
There wasn't that much space. Like, it was jammed by a couple inches, right?
I think she rolled into a ball like Samus Aran.
Secondly, how in the world was the script for Alien 3 approved? And was that truly the best script they had?
Interesting. In just a few minutes before we started rolling, I found on IMDb there was a work called Alien 3, spelled 3, like Roman numeral 3, III. I'm like, what is this? It came out like last year. Apparently it was an audiobook with a bunch of the same people, like Lance Henriksen and Michael Biehn, were in it, but I think it was an audiobook based on William Gibson's original Alien 3 script, which apparently was completely different than the Fincher Alien 3. So it sounded interesting. William Gibson, you know, was the famous cyberpunk author of the 80s, wrote like Neuromancer and stuff like that. So I don't know. But apparently there are some massive divergences in the Alien franchise way back then.
Hmm.
Well, and I'm a huge David Fincher fan, so the studio stepped in and made so many edits on that movie. So the movie that we actually saw is not truly like the movie Fincher had in mind. You know, so I know we can go back on like the Zack Snyder stuff and whatever, but they did make kind of like an assembly cut, which is as close to Fincher's vision as they have, and it is much better.
Hmm.
However, I know this might be a spoiler alert for some. How can you start the movie off by killing off Newt and Hicks?
And Bishop, right?
Bishop makes an appearance later on, but he's pretty much dead.
Oh, okay.
The top third of his body.
That's silly. It was just, I mean, that's just like, you know, that's just 90s, you know, nihilism, you know? It's like, whatever. Yeah. People die. Yeah. It's annoying.
All right.
It was bad.
Sean, do you have an unanswered question that's driving you crazy?
I do, and it has driven me crazy for years.
Mm.
What became of Dutch?
Oh.
So, after, obviously the movie's over and he flies away, but because they made Predator 2, like, so what does Dutch do? Like, where does he go from here? Like, does he go into hiding? Is he, I mean, he's just, you know, he survived the nuclear blast, but
they put him in a vault for 50,000 years because of, like, he has a half-life now.
So,
what was the emotional fallout of losing his entire crew? And there's no way that they, like, awarded him any medals or the whole thing was swept under the rug. So how does a man go forward after an experience like that, going face-to-face with an alien? I always wanted to know what happened to Dutch.
Also, according to Hollywood, he married Anna.
he married Anna. They moved to the seaside, and then that's what Commando was about.
Yeah. Alyssa Milano was Anna and his love child.
That was Anna's love child.
All right. So I got two questions. One real quick. Why does Bishop have to be in stasis on the trip back? Why does a half of a bishop have to be in stasis? He's a robot. Why does he require stasis?
I bet he didn't require stasis when he was a full robot, but now that he's cut in half, oh man, he needs that stasis.
He needs it bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they have to preserve him. I don't know.
So my other question.
They fill his stasis compartment with milk. Just like, here's some more milk for you.
So my other question, this is a pretty serious one, is there's no way that loader is fast enough to defeat the alien. That loader moves at the pace of 2 miles per hour.
You know what? A lot of people really love the fight between Ripley and the loader and the alien queen, but it's kind of the phoniest part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's cut weird. It's like it's moving so slow, and somehow the alien queen does not see it coming.
Yep. I don't know. It frustrates me. So, all right. Well, we've got some special awards, and most of them are just us determining, basically telling you guys who you are. So the most Cortese scene, my guess is going to be Ripley versus the queen. But I'm second guessing it like crazy. But anyway, John, what do you think? What's the most Cortese scene?
The most Cortese scene. This might be a cheat, but I think it's a super cut of everything Hudson says.
Yeah. Okay, Sean and Tony, you tell us what scene best represents the Cortese brothers.
Ooh,
I'll go with this, Sean. Yeah.
Go do it, Tony.
So. We have been Batman fans for the longest time. You know, we grew up watching the animated series. You know, Sean obviously has been watching these Tim Burton Batmans for years. My favorite Batman villain is actually Catwoman. So I think the fight between Batman and Catwoman might be our scene, just given that I love Catwoman, Sean's a Batman fan, and it's just a pretty awesome scene, personally.
Okay.
When you guys played as kids, did like one of you pin the other person down and then lick
their face? Yeah. So I will say that did happen from Josh on a number of occasions. It was drooling spit onto our face. There was a variety. So thanks, Josh. I'm still getting over it. So
Sean, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be. It would for sure be Bat. It would be Batman, and I'm good with that with the Catwoman. We could even do the one where he tells her to eat floor.
Oh yeah.
I've made you eat floor about 6 or 7 times over the years, so we could do that.
Very good. Okay, so the most Cortese character, I'm going with Blaine from Predator. John, what do you think?
Well, I guess I shouldn't say Hudson because I already kind of used it for the other one. I'm gonna go with Mac from Predator.
Okay, very good. Well, what do you guys think? What character is most Cortese?
I think it's Blaine. I think it's Blaine. Just the attitude, the whole thing. I think that of all the characters, we could say it would be Blaine. But Mac, I mean, that you guys nailed that because I love. Tony and I together, one of us, I'd be Blaine. Tony would be Mac because Tony would be he'd be smart enough to last long, and then. He always loves a dry shave. So.
Tony, you'd wear a suit to the beach. Possibly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and if I ever saw three dots, I would move my head into it.
just let it happen. Old Painless was waiting.
Old Painless. All right. So, Tony, do you agree? Or what are your thoughts?
So, I love the concept of having it being Blaine and Mac, just for the simple fact that those two are like best friends and like brothers in arms in a way. So I feel like that's would probably be the best representation of us, without a doubt.
All right, very good.
I think Sean's more Mac, and I'll take Blaine.
I'm okay with that because I probably would wear the suit. You know how I probably would wear the suit.
All right. So the most Cortese movie now. John and I are going to give our guesses, and you guys don't say anything because when we rank them, we'll find out what you guys think. Okay. So I'm going to go with Predator. John, what do you think?
I agree. It's like just sweaty and testosterone-y, and I don't know you guys too well, but like. You guys seem to be cloned from, like, you know, JR's brother's pecs, I think, you know. It's like you're, like, right there. So I feel Predator is the way to go.
From Jake's pecs?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So Battle Royale, like, we got a ring, and every hero and villain are, like, the main monsters, the main heroes, they're all in the ring. Who's coming out alive? So, John, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Dutch because apparently laser blasts seem to have no effect on him.
Neither do nuclear blasts.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Tony, what do you think?
Well, is there an airlock involved?
Sure, it's like it's Ripley's illegal foreign object in the ring is her airlock.
I'm going to go with the Predator.
Very good. What do you think, Sean?
Boy, I can't go against my guy Keats. I can't go against Batman. The guy he's gonna find a way, even if he's just gonna grapple his way out of there. he's gonna find a way.
Ah, very good. So I went with Predator. I think Predator's making it out. Catwoman's only got a couple lives left, and I think she's going to lose them both pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then this one is similar, but whose crew would be triumphant? The Weyland-Yutani Marines, Dutch's Green Berets, or the Red Triangle Circus? And I don't even think this is close. I think Dutch's Green Berets are the winners here.
It's Dutch's Green
without
Berets.
A doubt.
The clowns, they are like, I don't know, I feel like normal rodeo clowns could take down the Red Triangle guys. I mean,
but they do have a Gatling gun.
Yeah, Dutch's group. Well, Dutch's Gatling gun destroys all other guns,
including the Red Triangle's Gatling gun.
Yeah,
and their Gatling gun. But the Space Marines, they, like, collect all their magazines and then lose all their magazines in an explosion. They're just, like, Keystone Cops of the future.
And the Red Triangle does have everybody outnumbered. I mean, they're certainly not anywhere near the skill level. And I'm not making a case for the Triangle game. There would be a lot of bodies that Dutch's crew would take down. But,
Red Triangle game is also really lousy at blending into their environment.
Oh, yeah. They got guys on stilts.
Yeah.
And the Weyland-Yutani crew is just run so poorly by Gorman that they're going to be in a situation where they can't even shoot their own bullets. And so they're going to have to collect magazines and only use flamethrowers and maybe a shotgun for special occasions. And it's just going to be, bad. I mean, you saw what, Dutch's team did to that village
and the forest
them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They mowed that lawn. Like you can't believe.
They did mow that lawn.
But they hit nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a thing. We hit nothing. Not a thing.
All right. So it's time to get serious and rank these filthy films.
Real quick, Roy.
Yeah.
Two awards. First of all, I don't believe we did the Stan Winston Award for Best Internal Character.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I completely skipped internal character. It's Stan Winston. I also have Gatling guns. But internal character...
that's good. Gatling guns for external. I have an honorable mention for a guy named Crit Killen, who was the special effects squad for all three movies as well, along with Stan Winston.
Yeah. I mean, Stan Winston, right? Like, he's the guy that made all these movies work, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah. I don't know. I skipped that award. Did you guys have anything else?
No, Stan.
That's
Stan
perfect.
The belt, man.
Stan the man.
Yeah.
I also have an award for best weapon, really quick. I'm going to go with Penguin's helicopter umbrella, where he starts up the helicopter and then hands it to Catwoman to fly her away.
I don't know. I don't think anything matches Old Painless.
Old Painless is great.
Old Painless is waiting.
That sound of the Gatling spinning is so cool.
All right.
Real quickly, could that fishy swell that Alfred serves to Bruce that's cold, it's like that cold fish soup, could that be considered a weapon?
That should have been food. Oh,
yeah.
that would have been a good one for food.
Yeah, that would have
startled
been
the richest man in Gotham.
Yeah, that's what it should have been.
Also, when Hicks says to Ripley, I want to introduce you to a personal friend of mine. This is an M4-1A pulse rifle, 10mm with over and under 30mm pump action grenade launcher. That pulse rifle from Aliens is pretty iconic.
But it
is Old Painless. Old Painless.
Awesome. So this is where it gets serious. This was really hard for me to rank these, and I changed my rankings quite a bit, including 2 minutes ago. But let's start with you, John. What is your third favorite of these films?
Well, it's my second favorite film ever, but unfortunately my third favorite of this bunch, and that's Predator.
Ah, fascinating. Okay, all right. Tony, your third favorite?
Batman Returns.
And Sean?
Aliens.
Whoa.
Okay, so because Batman Returns has some problems, right? We had so much fun talking about it. So my number three is Aliens, and my number two is Batman Returns. Back to you, Sean. Your number two.
Boy, this is... Oh. Yeah, Predator. Predator 2.
Predator number 2. Tony, what do you got?
Sean, is that Predator 2 is in the sequel, Predator? Or is that just your second choice?
That was my second choice.
Okay, my second choice is Aliens.
All right, John, what's your number 2?
Can I pick Predator 2 for this one? I'm so close. It does have problems, but actually the problems are what make it so great. So I kind of almost feel guilty, but I'm going to go Batman Returns for number 2.
So John, your number 1 then is?
My number 1 is Aliens. I had such fun. It's been so long since I'd seen Aliens, and maybe that was a big part of it. But it was just so well put together. There's all this trivia about how James Cameron couldn't handle the crew, you know, because they were a bunch of, British people who worked 8-hour days because they were just the crew that was included with the studio, and how, like, they didn't get along. And it sounded like really, you know, like, it sounded like they were giving them a really hard time. But since then, of course, James Cameron is known to be kind of like the biggest jerk on set, so who knows who's telling the truth. But I don't know, this just. Cameron, the early Terminator stuff, and the Aliens, and the Terminator 2, I think he's such a great storyteller, but he tells the stories with tension, and I love it.
Very good.
Are you excited for Avatar 5 in the year 2030?
I'll probably watch it. So, you know, I actually kind of didn't mind the first Avatar. I didn't like the story at all, but actually, I thought it delivered visually, and it's like one of the first movies where I'm like, you know what, I could watch this for visuals alone.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree with you, but my question is, like, where is the appetite for the next Avatar movie? I mean, it's been like 35 years, and who's beating the drum for I can't wait for the Avatar, the 7 Avatar sequels to start coming out? I don't know.
I mean, as much as I don't, I feel like I wouldn't get along with him in real life, and I'm like, why are you doing that, buddy? Like, every generation, James Cameron is like, he does, like, the Terminator, and then he does Titanic, and it becomes the biggest movie in the world, and then 10 years after that, he's like, you know what, I'm going to make the biggest movie in the world again, and it's Avatar, and we didn't expect that, you know? And so maybe they'll be good.
All right, that brings us back to Tony, and I think we know your number one movie, but you might as well verbalize and make it official.
That would be Predator 2. it's Predator.
All right, nice. Sean?
Without a doubt, it's got to be.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There are flaws. It is insane, but that's what I love about Tim Burton. It's Batman Returns for that reason, and it's been in the lexicon of my life for so long that just the whole aesthetic, the whole thing, it's part of who I am, so that's why I chose it. I would, if we were talking best, you know, well-made movie or whatever, but it's not. It's favorite, and this is Returns does it for me.
I think Batman Returns is peak 90s goth, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of pivoted us where we were going to. A lot of people would say The Crow. If you listen to this podcast, you know I have some problems with The Crow. I think Batman Returns captures the 90s vibe a bit better for me.
Me too.
Do you think any of the problems with The Crow has anything to do with the prop department?
I don't have... Yeah. Oh, I get it. No, that's good.
Tough crowd.
they're all the guitar playing on the rooftops, I think.
All the guitar shredding on the rooftop.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys, officially it's Predator. I was shocked at how much I love Predator. It had been a really long time, and man, Predator is so good. So, all great movies. Man, you brought three incredible movies.
In a record setting, I think we broke the 2-hour barrier with awards this time. It's like amazing.
Yeah, wow. So, all right. So, you guys aren't done. You got to come back because you had your fun and now it's community service time.
Yeah.
So,
in
2 weeks.
Now the work comes.
Yeah, here's the work. In 2 weeks, we're talking twin movies and. I just refreshed the poll. The poll's closed, and we're watching Return of the Jedi. And I know a lot of people have problems with Return of the Jedi, and a lot of people bag on the Ewoks, but you know what? I was 5 years old when that movie came out, and that didn't bother me one bit. I think it's probably my second favorite Star Wars. Pretty close with maybe The Last Jedi and Rogue One.
Yes.
But I love Return
Jedi
of the Jedi.
Fan.
I love The Last Jedi. I think The Last Jedi was a great film. But I Return of the Jedi just has so much heart, and the ending is so satisfying. So I'm very excited to talk about romance between twins.
Ending doesn't count because of Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, well, okay. All right, so there you go. We are watching Return of the Jedi, but that's not it. John, what's a twin movie that we are going to watch?
Okay, it's probably the other one that's going to be picked, but... I looked it up. Technically, they are twins, and I believe it's the Jacques Tati movie, Young Girls of Roquefort, the musical about two young girls as twins.
Okay.
All right.
Young Girls of Roquefort. Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah. I'm sorry, Sean and Tony. I know John took your pick.
Is this going to be anything like Dream a Little Dream too? I mean, what a choice.
It's more musical. It's more French. It's on the Criterion Channel.
Okay. So it's like the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, but with twins?
I believe it's like Umbrellas of Cherbourg, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I've never seen it.
All right, Sean and Tony, you guys have got a movie for us.
My choice is Gone Girl, David Fincher's classic Gone Girl.
Gone Girl.
Oh, wow.
There are twins in that movie?
Ben Affleck and his sister, played by Carrie Coon, are twins.
There are twins in that movie. Oh, the girl from Dexter?
Yeah.
No, it's Carrie Coon. She was in like The Leftovers and
wasn't she in Fargo?
What else is she? She wasn't in that last season of Fargo. Yes.
Go on, girl.
Well, all right. So For hot twin action, we have Return of the Jedi, Young Girls of Rockefort, and Gone Girl, and that is what everyone's homework is. Now, coming up after that, we are going to be starting our Halloween marathon. So it's been decided what categories we're going to watch, and this is the order we're going to watch them in. So first category is going to be 19th century horror films as far. So the movie has to be set in the 19th century, which is basically like 80% of all horror films. So
yeah,
19th century. Did I say 19th century? I hope so. Anyway, 19th century horror films. After that, we will be watching obscure creature features, and I'm not sure exactly what's meant by that, but I've got a great pick, so I'm looking forward to that.
I can't believe that one won when I was like, when I was seriously questioning the nature of the category.
Oh yeah,
man, I've got great ones for that too. Jeez. Yeah.
So, and then the last one we will watch, and it won by one vote, and I'm really glad because I think I would have given up hope. So Dario Argento horror films, and I, if I could have qualified this better, I think I would have said 70s and early 80s, because I'm not into anything that he really made past the 80s. But anyway, we'll see what gets picked between.
That's what I voted for.
Yeah. Oh man, I can't wait. I'm really excited. So that's what we're watching. That's what October is going to be filled with, and we're going to have a good time.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, John. I'm sorry you didn't get to watch your scary Halloween documentaries.
None of the ones I voted for went through. This is going to be the worst Halloween I've ever had.
Maybe sit back with a bowl of fishy swell and ease your pain.
All right.
Bite someone's nose off. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, Sean and Tony, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure having you guys on. This was a great podcast.
I was honored that you guys asked us, and this was so fun. Thank you so, so much. We love what you guys do. Thank you so much. I had a blast.
Oh, it'll be so great to have you guys back in 2 weeks, and I think I'm going to be in my own home finally, so that'll be nice. Let's see. John, we got some administration. What do we need to tell the folks?
Okay, so we have a blog. And it has all of our stuff on it, you know, going way back to when we talked about, like, what did we talk about? We talked about the two grits and the flies and stuff like that and all that. So go to Yours, Mine, Theirs podcast.blogspot.com for that. The big thing is, I don't think it's called iTunes anymore. I think it's called Apple Music, which is crazy. Go to Apple Music. Leave us 4 stars and then leave a comment on. Actually, it's Apple Podcasts is what it is. Ugh, yeah, I don't even know. So go there. Go to Stitcher. Leave comments, ratings. Go to all those places where you can find us. On Facebook, if you do a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast, you should be able to find us. That's where a lot of the hot action is. That's where, like, Roy does all of his notes, you know, for these movies, and they're a joy. And especially, that's where all the polls are. That's where you can control our lives by telling us what movies to watch, what genres to watch. We are at your control, at least, you know, at least a third under your control. That's why it's called Yours, Mine, and Theirs, because you're the theirs, I think.
I think so. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. If you want to leave us a voicemail, call us. We have a number, 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. Don't worry. Call the number. I won't pick up. It just goes straight to voicemail. It's a specific voicemail set up for this podcast so you can complain to us on air. If you send us a voicemail, we will play it. We will play it. So you can say whatever you want. Of course, you realize we will rebut anything negative you have to say, but we will play you. Voice will be heard. Call that number. Say you want to be a part of the show, because we'll let that happen. And then the last thing is we have an email address, yours, mine, theirs, podcast@gmail.com. And we don't think we're locked out of it anymore. So yeah, you can send us an email. We'll talk about it.
Very good. All right. Man, I thought I had something else I wanted to say, but I think we're good. No, okay, yeah, I do, but we'll talk about it after. So, again, thank you, guys. Thank all three of you people who are listening to this podcast. We appreciate it. And hey, enjoy the movie. How was that for a lame extra?
That was pretty good. Huh?
It's yeah, I it's in your top 50.
Yeah, okay. All right, hold on. I'm gonna ambient noise. John, this is where you edit it out or don't, whatever. Looks like we got some bread, some mail.
Oh, there we go.
Good times.